Singapore. I'm not sure who is here. Bob Tilly. Into the who teach you about transport and start with two bad. Forget her name. All I'm saying is my engine. You know, I'm going to move to fucking kick. Angithi mina ngagcina kwashiyela indoda aseMpumalanga ngoba nomuntu ekhaya lapha ukuthi sekwenzakaleni ukusuka lapha angisazi. Oh, Bob, you're still brand new. No, yeah, no, to the road. Oh, okay. No, welcome. Introduce yourself. You just came and spoke to me about other people and other things. I assumed you are part of the Finnish Allied Parliament. Okay. But it's fine. DG, welcome. And I do want to indicate that I'm aware that the minister is not around, the Minister of Transport. But fortunately, she has a deputy who should be joining us in the course of our engagement. Well, maybe our starting point should be let us switch off our cellular phones. Because, as we always say, if it rings, whatever is being said here is not recorded. Even if it goes silent or vibrate. So, please, we asking for that compliance from wonke umuntu. Hope la ulisele the phone alone. Switch it off until we're done. Then you switch it. You see, even the ABC people switch their cell phones off because they know that's the rule, that's the law. So please. Okay, that having been done, we are going to start. And by way of starting, DG, we will request that we start with the introduction so we know who is here, starting from your side and the delegation that you have this side. Welcome, Comrade Chair. The Office of the Auditor General, do I see anyone? KB?
Chairperson, yeah, just an apology. The senior manager responsible for the audit is still trying to locate her. She's supposed to be here with the team.
Trying to locate the venue.
We're trying to locate her. Not sure whether she's on her way or but she's supposed to be here with the team. Renan, I think you would remember it from the briefing. So as soon as we know where she is, she's supposed to be here by now.
All right. Okay. Do we have anyone from National Treasure? Alright, that's fine. So from the officials, you introduce yourself, and then members of parliament will introduce themselves, and then we'll get going. So I'll hand over to you, DG, the delegation, to introduce yourself.
Thanks, Honourable Chairperson. Before I introduce the team, in fact, I'll ask them to introduce themselves and the roles that they play.
Yeah. But
I just apologize on behalf of the Deputy Minister. The Deputy Minister is attending two current committees, but she indicated that she will leave and she has asked for permission to leave early to be here with us. at the latest was around quarter past nine.
Yeah, that was fine.
Yeah. But my name is Mawetu Vilani. I'm the acting director general of the Department of Transport. I'm also leading.
No, that's right. The decisions themselves.
Okay. Thanks, sir.
My name is Superintendent Energy, Non-Executive Chairman of Open Direct Agents of South Africa.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair, Honorable Members. My name is Lucky Montana. I'm the Group CEO of APA.
Morning, Chair. My name is Fenton and Honorable Members. My name is Fenton Gaston. I'm the CFO of Passenger Air Agency of South Africa.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Dumisa Mkaboisele. I'm the CEO of Autopress, a subsidiary of PRASA.
Good morning, Chair and the Honorable Members. My name is Tarang Gubane. I'm the CEO of PRASA Crest, the Property Management Division of PRASA.
Good morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Chris Mbata. I'm the outgoing Chief Procurement Officer of PRASA.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Joseph Atongola. I am the incoming CEO of PRASA.
Morning, Chair. Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Tutu Zimzart. I'm the Regional Manager for Medirail in the Western Cape.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. Zola Kanaira, Chief Strategy Officer, PRASA.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Masangui. I am the CEO at Insight Asset Investments, which is the investment arm of PRASA.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, Honourable Members. My name is Yipuri Vagwane. I'm a policy analyst in the Office of the Director General, Department of Transport.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. My name is Godfrey Maluleke. I'm the Chief Director responsible for oversight of PRASA.
Good morning, Chairman and Honorable Members. My name is Musengwa Mufi. I'm the CEO of the Rail Operations Division within PRASA, which is responsible for rail operations, both Metro Rail and Shoshone Zamail.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Tabane Mtembu, Assistant Parliamentary Officer in the Office of the Minister of Transport.
Morning, Chair. My name is Dabulile from the Department of Transport.
Morning, Chair and Honorable Members. My name is Nonjabulo Maphanga. I am the Parliamentary Liaison Officer in the Office of the Deputy Minister.
Good morning. Thank you so much, it's my name. I am the Parliamentary Officer, Department of Transport.
Morning.
And my colleague, not a voice, is Bukuwe Sang, Director, Cabinet Services Office of the Minister.
Morning, Chair. My name is Ruyola Ntabula, from National Treasury.
All right. Singh?
Good morning, Chair and everybody. My name is Naren Singh, member of SCOPA.
Good morning, my name is Dion George, member of SCOPA.
Good morning, my name is Bill Robert, I'm a member of SCOPA.
Good morning, Chair.
My name is Faye Ikala Nkulhele Mituma, the member of Parliament.
Morning, Chair. My name is Rivera Makosha Mutsuda, Member of the Transport Committee.
Sihlalo, Kulitho Suka, ilungu lePhalamende, isabhokhwe sale committee yomthetho.
NdinguNompuyiselo Ngele, ilungu lePhalamende, Transport.
Morning, Roy NC, Member of the Committee.
Dumela, Thapelo, kulelungu lakomiti.
Kulishilwane.
Thapelo Shilwane.
Morning, Saramanena, member of SCOPA.
Morning, Yinsinya Longo, member of SCOPA.
All right.
lamra wa tebejane molelo kwa committee ya komela matoda cha patoko.
Good morning. I am Ruth Engel, the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Transport.
Right. I'm Comrade Temba Bundi. I chair the committee. DJ, I was saying to the group CEO of PRASA as he was thanking me for this invite that I know that we have been going past this engagement. So, towards the sunset of our tenure as the committee, we wanted to do justice to that long, outstanding engagement and afford you the opportunity to. To come before us. So we're happy to have you here. We last encountered PRASA in the State Parliament times ago when we did oversight on the state of the railway station. But we took a nicer route of traveling from Johannesburg to Cape Town, the parliament. But subsequent to that, I suppose we haven't had time to interact. The importance of PRASA cannot be overemphasized in terms of its role of moving our people and enabling them to go about their daily activities. As a public entity, we always have an interest in terms of how it functions and how it operates, how it meets its mandate, especially in the areas of managing its resources, especially compliance with the legislation, rules and regulations. And to emphasize the fact that every committee we deal with what kills the patient. So we're moving forward, looking backward. So in as much as we're happy with plans and projections, I'm sure the portfolio committee here takes much interest in those elements. We are interested in the part. To make sure that the past does not follow us into the future. So we'll move forward looking back. I think that's the way it's said. But to get us going, I'll head over to Comrade Shivane to engage us. We're looking forward to an early morning today. So from where we're seated, we want to be out of here as soon as possible. If we're going to be here any longer, it will be because of your interest in continuing to engage with us. Comrade Chula.
Thank you, Chairperson. My focus areas are two, Chair. Like you said, looking for an early morning achievement of plan targets, procurement and contract management. Maybe one should start by saying that you said that we've been longing to have this engagement with the entity, to congratulate the entity for them to have achieved an unqualified report. But however, there are issues that have been raised by the AG, which are the red flags, which we think if the entity would not really look to them carefully, will
needs the entity to regress in terms of what the AG has said. Chairperson, I'll then go to the land targets as it is reported here by the AG to try and have a discussion with the CEO. Hopefully I will be able to get an explanation. The AG reported that out of the 56 land targets for the financial year under review, the entity has not achieved 29 targets. This represents 52% of the total land target, which were not achieved. Probably it's mainly due to the fact that the indicators and targets were not suitably developed during the strategic planning session. One check is that entities are required to ensure that the SMART principles are followed when setting the targets. I mean, your specific, measurable, accurate, realistic, and time-bound. These are things that should be considered when you set your performance targets. Just want to get the clarity. Did the entity ensure that they comply with these principles when formulating a strategic plan and performance target for the year? Maybe if you can start there.
The board is the accounting authority. You are the one who account to Parliament, and management accounts to you. So our questions will be directed to you for a response and or refer to any other. Comrade Neil, welcome. The chairperson of COBRA and the Free State legislation. Welcome.
Thank you very much. I think as far as our meeting of the target and the way the target is because it has been asked by the honourable member. I would ask because CO to react to that. Thanks, Chair.
Chair, once again, thanks for the opportunity. I just want to assure the honourable members, COBRA, that we have followed all the principles, I think, that we tabled for through the Minister of Transport, the PRASA corporate plan, as tabled at the beginning of the year. And this plan outlined the details of the activities that we've undertaken in the year under review, but also, I think, that over an MTA period. And separate for that, of course, we've got the detailed strategic plan, which looks into the long-term goals of where we're taking PRASA to. Chairperson, I just want to confirm that if you look at our corporate plan, look at our annual report, the annual report, of course, it looks at our performance against the target. And I want to say to today that when you look at the performance of PRASA, we unfortunately don't have 52. Our plan is outlines 35 outputs or outcomes that must be delivered by the entity. And I think that if you look at those, you'll see that we have...
Are we having a dispute with the... I mean, we're talking about what is in this report. Says that you had 56.
So we have 35.
Where is the page? Can we refer to the page?
In our annual report, and not audit report.
That's fine. Let's go to the annual report because yeah. That's what we're here to review.
In this, the page.
Page.
Start from page 47.
47. Yeah.
And they'll go to. They'll go to page.
Did you say 47 or 37?
Page 47. 47. And go. It'll go right till page 40.
No. Let's go to page 42, the last paragraph.
Indeed, Chair.
Yeah.
Chair, I'm saying this is the report of the auditor general, which we've looked, we've discussed with the auditor general even before it was published. Chair, as I said, that when you compare that paragraph in 16, in 42,
yeah,
with both the annual report and the strategic, or rather the corporate plan of BRASA, we have 85 and not 52 or 56. Targets stated in this report.
So this report is wrong, the Auditor General.
Well, Chair, I think that my view is that it was unfortunate that it ended there, but we did a strata
contest. Let's keep it simple. Yeah. So the figure there, 56, is wrong.
Indeed, Chair, I'll say that, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. You were referring to page
47, Chair. Or I'll start from 46. And I think until 54, it deals with the performance targets that are there. And so when you break them down, you see that out of the 35, we have delivered on 80% of those, where we have...
out of 35, how many? I'll
break them down, Chair.
Just put a figure and say out of 35 we achieved 27.
We achieved 28, eh?
28. Okay.
And 7 are those that were not achieved.
Okay.
And we basically 14 were fully completed, or we've exceeded our target. 14 are those that were partially achieved, where we got 90% or so. And 7 is where we, for example, our performance would be less than 30%. So that is what we have here, and we think that as far as we've delivered on those particular targets.
Still on the target.
Sir, maybe I think because we really rely on the annual report that is presented by the AG in terms of the financial statement. Maybe we as the CEO saying there's a disagreement in terms of what we are discussing here. I don't know whether if the AG will be able, before I just want to make a follow-up.
No, they're not here yet.
They're not here yet.
Yeah.
Or probably they're not coming because they're usually here early. I don't know.
No, there's a search party searching for them.
Yeah, because they were supposed to be able to come. Because one of the other issues, Chair, which I thought maybe the chairperson of the board will talk to it, is that one of the issues in terms of the root causes for the entity to have not been able to meet the targets as reported here. Because we can only engage a dozen to talk to the entity. To say we can only engage on what is written here in terms of the annual report. AG's report in terms of despite whatever that we might get. So I think we are confined to say that it was reported that the board did not consider the proposal. I think it was proposed. I think the entity, when they realized that they are unable to meet the targets according to the AG report, the board did not consider to the proposal made by the entity for the adjustment, which I think that's the thing that is bring us here to say that targets were not achieved as planned. Maybe we should hear from the board.
It is a difficult one because that referring to the plan, which is also part of the of annual report. We've got targets that we've set ourselves.
But then how did we end up submitting to Parliament a report that is errors? Because what you're saying is that what is on page 42 is not correct. So how did it find its way to Parliament?
Chair, all the information in the annual report it belongs to BRASA, but the report of the Auditor General is an independent report. So even where between the Auditor General and BRASA there would be a disagreement or a difference of view,
that the auditors will, for example, continue to write their reports.
No, the issue here cannot be a difference of views. If the number is 5 and say it is 3, it's not a difference of views. As long as we all know arithmetic, we can come to an argument. You say 35, they say 56. And I'm saying, my understanding is they send you management letters. And they give you this report, and you are the one who compile it and submit it to Parliament. So you could have resolved the issue of 35 and 56.
Indeed, I think let me just explain a bit in terms of what methodology they did. The Auditor General, they did confirm with us that they didn't audit each and every output that we had.
No, that's fine. I think at this stage, we're at the level of numbers, not on the judgment that they've made on the substance. I'm saying they have 56, and you say you have 35. And I'm saying it is a simple matter that could have been resolved, because you could have said, here is our stuff, let's count together, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and do 35. And then you have a correct figure written here.
Agreed, Chair, and I think that's what we did. Rather, I personally met the AG's office to share exactly that approach, but the final report was produced in that way. So I think the AG's office is the only one that can prepare.
But they repeat because they're here. They have claimed in a briefing to us that you did not submit to them the final report so that there could be a review of consistency between audited information and any other information that you have.
Chair, again, that is not correct. Both financials, the draft financials and the draft annual performance were approved by the Board of Tata by the 31st of May as is the requirement of the PFMA, and both were submitted well in time. But of course, during the audit, there is a steering committee between the AG and ourselves where these issues are being dealt with, and I think where we had a different view or where we have responded to the management letters, all of those issues are clear on record, Chair.
Alright, that's fine. I'm sure they will be here, and then we can have those things cleared.
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, because if you count the targets, they are over 50. It's just unfortunate because they're not here. I think maybe we'll engage with them when they come in, so that we're able to move forward. So that we're able. I don't know whether then I should leave this item of discussion for now.
I think
maybe I should leave it maybe and go to the next one. Oh. And then we'll then come back when they are here.
Okay.
Sorry. I've been having a hand up, but maybe I must just take a point of order now.
Yep.
But I think we need to clarify this chart, you know, as we go, because if we start off on the wrong foundation, then we're completely wrong. As far as I can read and add, there probably are 35 programs, but the targets that are placed here by the by PASA are more than 50. It's about 57, 58, where there are percentages and variances. So I cannot understand the CEO when he says there's something wrong here. It's probably the interpretation. There are 35 programs with 56 or 58 targets that have been set here. So unless I understand that and the committee understands that, I don't know how we're going to move forward. Because this is the first question that has been put by Honorable Lee.
Yeah, no. I think I'm sure the AG's office will be here. And then, but I think we'll come back to it. And I think the issue of whether it's 56 or 35 is neither here nor there. And I don't think that was the centrality of the question. The centrality of the question was you have set target of what you want to do for the year under review. You have not achieved everything. Why? Whether you achieve 90% or 80% or 50% or 30%, the issue is that which you had set for yourself, you have not achieved. I think that's how I understood it. So I don't want us to get hooked on numbers necessarily.
Yeah, I think you are right, Chairperson, because that is why I said my second question. I said to the board why they did not approve in terms of when the entity wanted to make the adjustment, which I think is something that they realized that we are not going to achieve the targets. Therefore, the only people who can assist us, the board, to give us the permission, but the board could not do. So I did not even get that answer.
No, it's fine. We'll get it. Obviously, why didn't the board in Ikwito refuse to agree to an adjustment of the target?
Let me just understand that when you set targets, we don't want to set moving targets. Let me put it that way. But you don't want to set moving targets which are going to be moving because there are certain things which are not happening in certain areas. So I think generally speaking, I would say that when we have the targets at the beginning of the year, we want to help management to keep the targets. I don't think it would be good to report management that whenever there's something that is not being achievable, then you say, let's move it, let's go our standard. I think that there are different reasons why those targets. I think one of the criteria that it's whether it's 54 or 35, it's because the percentage, I think it is important, Chair. If you don't achieve about half of your targets, when you're achieving your 20% of the targets. So those targets that you're not achieved, I think we can deal with them because there are different reasons for different targets not being met. But then it's going to be really a lot of challenges, percentage achievement and percentage not achieved. I think it is material that we have about.
Can we then talk to why these targets, whether it's 20% or 50%, why were they not achieved?
Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. Let me refer to honourable members to the again to page 47, and I'll go through the specific output and outcomes that we set, what we have achieved. Chair, I think the we set ourselves a goal of restructuring the balances of FASA.
But General, before we go to each one of them, globally, when you look back, what comes out as some of the reasons that that strike out, say, those that we did not achieve, generally there were a combination of factors A, B, C, D that impeded us, without going to each one of them.
Thank you, sir. I think two things are coming out. The first one, of course, is that that we have to ask ourselves, Prasa, have we delivered on our mandate? The first major one, I think, that we can see in this annual report is that indeed we have delivered on our key strategic goals that we set ourselves as Prasa. I think that is the one.
I want us to focus on those that was not achieved. Those that we've achieved were very heavy.
Indeed, sir, but that's what I am, so that I can outline them. When we went achieved, sir, which will be about 20%, I want to deal with two issues. The first one is on safety. If you look in page 49, that is one area we will deal with. The safety parts where we've done well is on the bus side. I think that you'll see that we had quite a lot of accidents, and most of those have actually involved either bus hitting livestock, those kind of things. On the other side, I think that we had only one major accident, and as you know, railways, one rail accident involves a lot of people. So it gives an impression that, of course, we've had many accidents. We've had one accident, but many people got injured. Of course, it didn't exceed the target as it was. We certainly reduced, for example, fatalities, collision passengers by 5%. And I think that when we look at the environment there, we have the problem, other than the big accident that we had in Swanee last year, we've of course had people who cross the railway lines, and we have informal settlements that are built next to railway lines. These are the issues that are very, Chair, that we'll talk about. The second issue, Chair, where we are told that we didn't do well, is in respect of the area of property. I think then we've wanted to release quite a lot of space at our own station, but of course that is a market issue, that the market conditions for the acquisition of rental space, I think that has been bad. I think all of that, we do see empty buildings around, and so that is part of the restructuring that we have. The third one, Chair, that I want to refer to, and that would be my final point, is that we have, and let me give one example where we deal with infrastructure. Bridge City Project. The Bridge City Project, we meant to complete it at the end of the financial year. I think that it's a project that we launched last week. Unfortunately, towards the end of the project, the contractor had the major strike, the bridge was burned, and therefore that we had to actually start rebuilding that beach afterwards. But other than that, Chair, and then we, of course, we've got the Green View project, which I think is 80% complete. The Green View project is in the east of Pretoria, where we are doubling the railway track, and we're building three stations. And the reason for that, Chair, was very simple, that we have to build the bridges. Informal documents got established, so we completed the building of the rail line. But the building of the station couldn't be built until the city of Pine had actually relocated the communities, and that work was only completed now. So these are some of the reasons that we see, Chair. But overall, we as the proper person management are quite satisfied that only going to set ourselves, so we've actually done well.
No, that's fine. Today is about the satisfaction of the committee. That's why you're here, so you can explain to us. So we're at your level of satisfaction.
Okay. If I just add, if the honorable members would just put themselves into the board shoes, I think one of these targets comes before the board. We all want to stretch them. I think it's very important that we try to stretch them. But as we can do that by doing so, we can even be shooting ourselves on the foot by stretching the targets and find that management is not achievable. This project of more of the ticking box thing, the answer to what the targets, you know, that some of the things we don't have total control of. For instance, when it comes to people who are crossing the railways and so on and so forth, it's a bigger social problem, for instance.
Let's leave that part.
Okay. When I look at
the extreme right on page 49, the issue of people crossing railway lines not placed as a reason. So,
yeah.
I think it's fine. You said you don't want to have moving targets as a board, which I think is good. Once you've set and planned and said this is what we want to do, let's go and do it. Otherwise, we'll never have a plan. We'll allow her to finish, and when she's finished, then we'll allow members to just note the questions that you may want to come into.
I'd like to say something that we've always shared with the honorable members, that the fact of the matter is, as far as our rolling stock and as far as our signaling is concerned, that we have a very accurate and opposite signaling. So for example, the lightning, those things get hit, and then when there's lightning, there's rain and so on, and our system is very fragile, so to speak. So one of the things we should look at the accident.
I think Baba says it, and let's leave that part and allow it to continue. Because unfortunately that invites further questions. I mean, if you say you want to reduce fatalities, but you don't fix your signaling equipment, you don't deal with overcrowding, which you are recording here as a reason, then what was the basis for setting up that target when the conditions for its achievement out there? Okay, continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you for the answer, Chair. I think we'll have to, for us to have progress, we'll have to wait. I don't know the NC people, where are they? But it's fine. I'm going to move to procurement and contract management. And then when they come in, we'll later again, so that we're able to clear. On procurement and contract management, the AG has reported that the entity incurred a regular expenditure amounting to 17.2 million for the year under review. And of this 17 million, 14.992 million was due to procurement awards made without three quotations being obtained and deviation from the supply chain management policy without prior approval of the group chief executive officer and the accounting authority, which is also contrary to the requirements of the PSMA CEO. And maybe one will just want to start by asking who has made that deviation without your approval, and then the rest we will discuss as we continue. And where is this person?
Kumuchulwana. The person coming to account to us is the chairperson of the board.
Okay.
So we direct the question to him. Sure, management has reported to him.
Okay.
All these things. Then he can respond or refer to somebody else. But
okay.
The responsibility of rest
okay.
First and foremost with him.
Okay, sir.
Sure.
Thanks very much. I think that indeed our PRASA policy, SCM policy, dictates that where there's deviation from normal procurement processes, including the three code system, approval should be sourced from the group CEO. I think that is normal practice in our business. Where we had instances. For example, if there are two employees who, for example, in this particular case, I think that they, within our REM division in particular, they didn't follow those. I think that but for amounts, of course, that is not 17 million. The overall amount, where people didn't get the records, the amount to 1.3 million rands. The other amounts, of course, when we talk about the regular expenditure, is attributed to, for example, employees that were suspended, or that were fired, and what it means is that these are employees that we who break the law, that we take action, but of course they've got rights, and some of them take it to the CCMA, to the labor court, and therefore when court decides otherwise, we pay. And I think that that's what is one of the issues regarded as a regular expenditure. There was a case, of course, of an employee who was relocated on an agent basis, and that is for 56,000 rand. And that employee, of course, that the AG found that we didn't follow fully the relocation policy of PRASA. And then there was an employee chair that for 54,000 rands that we found that the auditors found that was employed. And
right.
That person was not fully qualified.
No, that's fine. Let's not
just come in. Is saying it's 1.3 million. I don't know whether I didn't get him right.
No, you got him right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm struggling to really understand in terms if the CEO is disputing. Because here in terms of the report, it's saying an incurred irregular expenditure amounting to 17.234 million. And I don't know. The CEO is saying 1.3 million. I don't understand. I think I must have that. Maybe
no,
I'm...
No. It's saying the information you're having is wrong. That's the long and the short of what you're saying.
No, sir. Could I say myself again?
Mm-hmm.
I said the honourable member correct. The total irregular expenditure of 17,234. There's no dispute about that. I then broke it down. What made that 17 million? I said for the three codes, where the honourable member asked about is 1.310. And then I went out to describe what, because the 17 is a totality. It involves interest. It involves many other issues that are associated. So we're in agreement, but I was breaking it down in detail.
Can you repeat your question? Maybe I didn't understand.
Okay. So let me read the.
In relation to the deviation?
Yes, in relation to the deviation. I was saying an irregular expenditure of 17.284 million in cash. Of this irregular expenditure, 14.992 million was due to procurement hours made without three quotations.
Right.
Yes.
The CEO is saying no, it is 1 million, not 14 million. So you are not in agreement.
So is making the total breakout. Maybe probably he's still giving us information. Maybe not giving a time for you to respond.
Comrade Deputy Minister, welcome. Welcome. We go to your apologies.
So let me there are two questions. The first one was that I clarified the policy that when you deviate from any procurement policy, you require the approval of the group CEO. I think that is policy where employees do not follow, like in this instance, two employees were identified to obtain, for example, one quote without two quotations. We've taken disciplinary action against those. And I think almost some the process is very clear. So out of the 17, if I'm allowed on the second issue to break down.
No. She's saying, this is very clear, I'm talking numbers. She's saying of the 17 million, 14 million is for the deviation. Bob Tule, are we together?
No.
I mean, the other I was giving was relevant. Simple. She's saying, of the deviation, out of the 70 million, that which was incurred as a result of deviation is 40 million. And the CEO's response was that it is 1 million. So if either I didn't hear him well, he must confirm and say, yes, it's 40 million. Then we'll say we're in agreement. And if we're in agreement, then it's only four cases. The other issues we're talking about were in relation to the other elements. So I wanted us to deal with that part first. Are we in agreement that the amount arising out of the deviation from procurement purposes is 40 million? Or are we in disagreement? If we're in disagreement, what are the figures?
So can I provide the figures on the breakdown of the 17.2 million rents?
Mm-hmm. The question does not talk to 17 million, it talks 14 million.
Okay, if I could just add my numbers here quickly.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the deviations of the totaling amount, there were four. I do have the companies which the deviations were done from. Maybe one would want to know the breakdown in terms of how much was deviated from each company or contractor. I do have them, or maybe she's mentioned them, or the CEO, I don't know, if she's mentioned them. It's Spanish Ice Logistics, Manual Securities,
the Teflo,
yes. Promokit and DFCC. And these deviations or this contract were awarded for nature of emergency. And I think we just want a breakdown of how much each company got in terms of these deviations. That's the first question.
I'm going to ask the CEO of RAI to deal particularly in the regional member of Metro RAI to invest in Cape to deal particularly with the vehicle and the manual security one, and also the action that we've taken as management to correct that.
Thank you, Chairperson. Let me deal with
we requested that cell phones be switched off. Because as it was doing what it was doing, whatever I was saying was not being recorded. So, please. No. Sing is always fully compliant. It can't be him. Okay, continue.
Thank you, Dr. Person. I will deal with the two major deviations that have been recorded in the Auditor General's report.
These are just the major ones. There are a lot of minor ones.
No. I'm saying out of the 14 million that has been mentioned, the ones that constitute 3.5 million of that, which is one, the manual security appointment. I will stipulate the reasons behind and what have we done to deal with the problem. The first one, which amounted to 9.6 million, is the appointment of manual security. Now, manual security, just to give you the context, it happened here in Cape Town. We had in 2011,
Just a minute, please, wherever you are, just take your cellular phone and switch it off. Please, switch off your cellular phone. All right, continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. The appointment of manual security, just to context, Chairperson, we had a major security strike in Cape Town
in December 2011. At the time, there was a spike in terms of the sabotage, vandalism of our operating equipment, and the regional EFCO management of the Western Cape.
Just a minute. AD, I see that the Auditor General is here.
Yes,
he is
here.
That's fine. Just to quickly refresh facts, because we seem to be having a lot of disputes on federal matters here. So we will certainly want your assistance. You can continue, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson. The regional management took a decision that because this was posing a threat to the operations and to the safety of our passengers, to appoint a company, security company, on an emergency basis. That decision was taken, and the supply chain manager was tasked with the responsibility to enforce that decision. Of course, in the course, we realized that the processes were not followed, the proper process, because with an emergency in terms of our supply chain policy, we are supposed to write to the CEO to spell out the reasons behind an emergency appointment, and the CEO has to make that decision. In this case, that wasn't followed. In fact, Chairperson, we picked up this issue prior to the audit. My office...
Move towards what did you do?
Yes. We conducted an investigation even prior to the audit itself by the AG, and then we put in place a disciplinary process. The official who are responsible for this transgression has since been dismissed for the transgression. So that is the minor security appointment. And I'll be very short on the second one as well. The procurement of vehicles, which constituted 3.8 million, as well as an investigation.
Which company is that?
This is Spanish ICE.
What was the amount involved?
It's 3.8 million.
Okay.
On Spanish ICE logistics as well, procurement process wasn't properly followed, and there also an investigation has been conducted. One official has been fired in terms of fraudulent activities in relation to that. There's one pending disciplinary case, and the contract has since been terminated.
All right. The other two remaining?
Yeah.
No, no, no. I thought the CEO referred some to you and your spoken to two.
I needed to just the third one, which is the three codes, which amount to 1.3 million. Now, on the cases on the three codes, at the Passarail head office...
Which company of the four, of the remaining two?
Well, it's a number of companies. I can request our supply chain to give us the details. But in those cases, this is cases where, for instance, our own supply chain officials...
No. We're four companies. Spanish ICE, Manual Security, Promo Kit and Gear, Vectorform. So you're spoken to two companies. Then you have two that are standing.
Okay.
And I think your question was, what were the amounts involved and what has been done in each of these four cases? So you've spoken to two.
Yes, I think the others, the supply chain head will.
What?
Million, it's a combination of all that the AG tested around the same code system.
No. I'm saying we have four companies here. And the gentleman has spoken to two. So you have two remaining. And I thought you were going to talk to these two other companies in terms of what amounts were involved, who did what, and what have you done. In the same vein that he has explained the other two. This was causative factor. This is the action that was taken.
I don't have the detail of the 1.3.
Promo kit and gear.
Excuse me?
Yeah.
Can you just send that to other companies and then we'll provide the information?
Okay.
Okay, Chairperson, maybe just for record purposes, I just want to
for us to be able to record this. That the answers that they provided here, from the total amount that we have here from the report, it's 8.6 million. That's made the so that we are able to say that we still have to have the answers of about something like 5.1 million for it to be able to add up to the 13 million for the purpose of recording Chairperson. My question which will follow after the answers that they've provided is that to check in terms of whether there are measures put in place. I would hear that some of the officials have been fired, and probably, I don't know if maybe they've already got their pension, but because in this committee we believe that we should be able to recover the money. You fire a person, got this pension or a pension, but money is lost. So we are interested in terms of how do we recover the money. You can fire a person that we should be able to recover the money. But the question that I wanted to ask is to check in terms of the what are the measures which have been put in place that contravention doesn't occur in future.
Thanks. So to talk about the value of money, I think it's also important to note that the money which disappeared was dedicated to service, right? I think the point that we are making is that the proper supply chain management policies were not followed. So the company did a greater service as far as its expenditure was concerned. So I must say that it's one of those things where we've got about 15,000 employees. You say you have the policies, you take them down, all in action, you teach them that they should do things and so on and so forth. But you know, you have done things. I think it's a combination of a lot of things. One, to be able to accord the consequences that don't follow policies. And I think the CEO has referred to that. But on the other hand, it's education and education and education. I think you continue doing that. And one of the most consequences for things, losing a job, I think it's quite one of the harshest sentences that you can even meet out. We've seen before situations where people have been demoted in the organization for not having followed the purposes of the company. So the combination of a number of things which are continuous trends and clusters to other members of the community. But with all these combinations, with all these areas of places that we do, we try to bring our ideas into line. But as you can see, I think the concept is that there are consequences of following the policies of the organizations and the legislations and the legislation which govern us.
Chairperson, that's a promising one. The answer they are providing. But now one will just want to, for interest, to check in terms of those, even those that are fired. In fact, do we have any employees that have interest in this company, besides those that have flawed the laws? Do we have people who have interest in terms of these companies? You know, maybe it's Tapele Chilwan who's got a company to be able to influence within the Brasa community, within the Brasa family.
I know the CEO. I know the clear principles of declaration of interest in the company's guide and plan of the company to how it deals with this issue. But in that point, we are speaking. But I'm allowed to be CEO to demand this position.
Chair, other than the undeclared interest, rather the declared interest, I'm not aware of people that they may be, but of course, if we catch them, we need to take action on those, but I'm not aware at this point in time based on the declaration that people have submitted.
Okay, thank you. Chairperson, we'll now go to the six contracts. There are other six contracts which were contract amended or extended without the approval of the delegated officials in contravention of the legislation. Can I mention them? In full products
PDI LTD, Mel Bransley, Ms. Fenny, Morgan Cabon, Penbro, Kelnick, and Ms. Yahamba. Why are these officials who have extended these 6 contracts without approval of the delegated officials?
These contracts, each one of them, fell within the delegation authorities of the official who attended them. What the AG had done was to consolidate all of them into a figure of 40 million and said, you know, the official did not have the delegation authority. So each and every one of them, if you don't aggregate them, the CEO of Asatec had the requisite delegation of authority. So our submission here is that they were done properly, but through the audit, they were consolidated to 42, and of course if you consolidate them, they would come above the delegation authority of the
government. I'm not a dispute.
Look, Mr. Mbatha, it cannot happen that way. You see, and it takes us back, or maybe let's go back to that initial point. In the briefing notes, if you have them in front of you, KB, 2.2 of the briefing notes, and just talk to us about that statement. Because it might be the root cause of all these variations or variances about what happened and what did not happen.
Thank you, Chair. I will take that. On our briefing note 2.2, it refers to the paragraph that's in the auditor's report when we said that we had not reviewed the draft annual report at the time that we had signed the auditor's report. Having said that, that means that at that point when we submitted this auditor's report, this annual report that's in front of you was still in draft, and therefore we hadn't made sure from audit point of view that there are no inconsistencies between what we are reporting and what PRASA is presenting in the annual report. Basically, that's what that paragraph means.
All right. Let's get to this specific case and see if it is a product of that lack of review. You are saying on page 43, paragraph 21, 6 contracts were amended or extended without approval by a delegated official, resulting in non-compliance with the SCM policies developed in terms of the PSMA. And you followed that up by giving us the names of those companies which convey Chulan and Zafred. And Mr. Mbatha says, no, what you are referring to is an aggregated figure. If you disaggregate it, it all fell within the delegated powers of the official. So, are we missing something here?
Chair, from an audit point of view, we're not missing something in terms of what has been reported and what we had reviewed during the audit process. From what the evidence that we had reviewed, we had found that those officials did not have authority to extend those contracts at the time of the audit. So there is nothing that's missing from an audit point of view.
Can I request a quick response to respond to that?
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to add a bit of light on this issue, specifically paragraph 21. This paragraph 21, after the audit report was written,
I had a meeting with the AG in my office where we had agreed that it's incorrect, but their argument was that the evidence came a little bit late when it was provided to them, and I had insisted at that point that they should write a letter to the DOT and National Treasury, of which they had promised to do, but later on they came back to tell me that they can't because they believe the auditors, when they received the documents, they got them late for them to reach a conclusion that that is not an issue. So I don't know, maybe the AG, because she was there, although she wasn't the senior manager on the audit, but she came with the senior manager who was on the audit. I don't know if she can shed some more light on that.
Sir, on that, the group CFO is correct in that we had an engagement after the audit process. And he had said there is evidence that the approvals were done at the correct delegated level. And our point of view still stand to say that during the audit process, the evidence that we received, that we reviewed, we came to a conclusion then, and it was, and this finding were discussed with management before they were brought into the auditor's report to say that the delegated levels that signed this were not, did not have the authority. So what he's saying in terms of engagement after the auditor's report was signed, he is correct in that. But from what I'm aware of, we, at the time of the signing of the auditor's report, that is the evidence that we got, and that's the evidence that we reviewed and we reported on.
But when you subsequently engaged, was, did they bring contrary evidence or evidence to contrary, which contradicted the evidence that you reviewed? Because if you say you reviewed evidence, it means you had something in writing. Now, if they later brought evidence that that it was at the correct level, it means there will be something that contradicts what you've seen. Was that the case?
So from the record that we have, we did not receive documents that contradicted what we have reviewed. However, the CFO had indicated that that evidence exists.
But did,
after the order.
I mean, did he not have it with him at that point? Because that is the critical point. Did he not have that evidence and say, here it is?
Let me respond. I think as I said in my last paragraph of my statement, I said it was an agreement between the AG and myself that they're going to write a letter to the National Treasury and DOT to stating that paragraph 21 is incorrect.
But is it true? Is it true that the final draft annual report was not submitted for review of consistency between the audited information and other information that would be included in the report?
Chair, maybe let me just respond on this one. I think the four portions of the annual report which we might refer are not made directly related to this particular item because all the documentation relating to this item were basically submitted. All I'm trying to say is that I got evidence of emails even prior to the signing of the audit report, which was signed on the 6th of August and not the 1st by their CE, where I literally communicated that the evidence is here, your team is wrong on this one. And we came to my office, there were three of them. We reached a conclusion that they are incorrect. And I was promised in that meeting that they're going to write a letter to the National Treasury and the Department of Transport. Now, I'm surprised to be told that because the argument they had is that maybe they had not seen this particular evidence. But we said they were given that evidence. And they had communicated to me that they had concurred with me, including their business executives, that they're going to, on telephone conversation, that they're going to deal with that. And that they're going to back us when we come to Parliament. And I'm surprised that the story is not the same today.
So the six companies that are mentioned here, there is no basis to allege that these companies' contracts were extended by officials without the approved delegation of authority.
Chair, yeah, that's exactly correct.
Delegation or not. If there was delegation, that's one thing. If there was no delegation, that's also another thing. No, I don't want us to belabor the point because we're not there. It will be your word versus her word. But you see, Chair, the problem arises when you submit to Parliament documents that you come and start debating their content here. Those who are going to read this annual report and who are here, what story should they have in their mind? You?
It's exactly the same point that I want to address, because I think it's unfortunate, and the issues that are mentioned in the management letter, which we respond to, and of course are significant matters, not isolated cases, significant matters that tell you about your control environment and everything, that the AG, for example, want to elevate into the audit report. We had discussion, Chair, and I think if there is a party that will feel a bit aggrieved, it's probably BRASA, because let me tell you.
No, you don't have to tell you anybody in this meeting. Just say what you want to say.
In this idea, when I have a number of speaking, Chair, let me change that. Chair, we went to the audit committee of the board. The audit report was tabled there. We had discussions with the audit committee, said this draft will affect the auditor general should go back and engage with management on the issues that are in dispute. So I personally have the first item that we discussed, and then the issue that the group CFO has just mentioned. So the documents are available, changes were made, but this audit report, and that is the point that I wanted to make to this group, I wish we would come to this point. But this report, the final report that we have that is included in our annual report, we didn't say it, it never came before our board. Precisely because when the letters were made, we went to discuss, a lot of changes kept on being made, but we submitted as part of our annual report to both the AG and National Treasury before we went out in print to make sure that the consistency between what they have audited. So I think the point that I want to make here, that we are today responding onto an audit report, which the final product never had sight of, until it's been signed off, and that all the issues that we've raised have actually not been taken. So that is why we have a lot of issues where we say, either dispute of fact, how do you address that, but I don't want to elevate that. I've emphasized here, the reason why I took up those issues with the AG personally, is because the audit report, because it's included in the annual report, it's going to the users, so to which is Parliament, the Minister of Transport, members of Parliament, SCOMPA, and even investors. And I thought that if you convey that picture, I think that's going to create a lot of problems. So we're not going to interfere with the work, but we respect the important work of the Auditor General. But we're in doubt with unfair, Chair, and I think that's the point that I want to make.
The point you're not making the initial statement she made, that when I referred to paragraph 2.2, which said that the final draft annual report was not submitted to them to ensure that these inconsistencies are dealt with before it is published.
Chair,
I suspect probably where the missing took place, if there is any missing.
Chair, let me confirm that we submitted when the report, before it went to print, we submitted both the auditors and we submitted to National Treasury. What is the issue is an audit report, which was signed off without management changes. Now, if the auditors say to us, we have heard you as management, but we disagree with you, therefore we put based on sound and on professional consideration, we respect that. But if an audit report is not shared with us, then it's signed off and we are required to put it and come in defense. I think it's something that I've just been unhappy. I'm just happy about that. I want to assure you, Chair, we tabled to both Treasury and AG.
Not fine, I hear you. But then how then did you then compile this and submit it to Parliament with all those major flaws, all those challenges?
Chair, there's no major flaw in the annual report as a whole. There's a major flaw in the audit report.
I'm talking about the audit report.
Well, Chair, it's not a decision of power. Once the auditors have expressed an opinion,
That opinion must be presented. It must be included in our annual report. We don't interfere. It's not our report. It's a professional report. The only thing I can do is to come to Parliament and debate and say that it's unfortunate. Shouldn't go to that, because I assert that we as PRASA respect the important work of the auditors. But this audit report, if it was said before, unfortunately the chair of our audit committee has been unwell. He would have been here and summarized, in fact, what he directed us as the management and the auditors to go and change before even this audit report is table, Chair.
But on page 40, your chairperson of the audit committee says, we concur with and accept the Auditor General of South Africa's report on the annual financial statement.
Chair, which part
that are you referring to? Cut and paste, or did you really go through the report?
Chair, I'm trying to see the
just above internal audit. The paragraph about internal audit on page 40. Yeah, let him respond to that and then I'll come back.
Chair, the specific issue there, as you can see, that we're talking about the performance issues, the chair refers more specifically to the auditor's financial statements. Okay? The numbers of the terms we discussed with them there, but the audit report, which is basically the summary of what they take in the audit, is what is in dispute here there.
Alright, let me hear you. We'll come back to that.
Yeah, Mr. President, I'm not sure. Maybe we should ask the department to speak on this matter, because seemingly, you see, it is us who are at an unfortunate side as this committee, because we're engaging on this report, which between both the entity and the AG's office, there are contradictions in terms of this report. I'm not sure whether whatever what it is that we are discussing is it proper or not, but maybe probably the political leadership of the department will be able to say something, because I think it would have been to say, I think in terms of the rules, the HCC together with the department will have to turn to the speaker to say that maybe we don't table this report, give us some terms that we thought, things that we think we are not agreeing in terms of this report. I think that it's something that should have happened. So maybe, I don't know whether the political leadership of the department can say something out of this, so that we know that even if we are continuing with this report, are we really, is it value for time? I'm not going to say value for money. Is it value for time? Because we have been doing something, because discussing something that is not out, it is out of context in terms of this report. Really, it's really tough. We are the unfortunate ones sitting beside a CEO and chairperson. We are the unfortunate ones, because can't get right answers. Everybody is saying this. Everybody. I'm finding myself, because I'm leading the discussion, being frustrated, chairperson. Maybe the political leadership will have to say something.
Well, without putting the Deputy Minister on the spot, if this issue had been brought to you, well, we can hear from you.
No, thank you, Chairperson and Honourable Members. And again, let me apologize for coming late. Instead, I was attending the CAP Committee meeting, and we had two items to present. But also, I think I would want to apologize for Minister Paul Peters, who wanted to be part of this meeting, but of course she's outside the country, she's in DRC together with the President. Chairperson, the issues that are raised, we are aware of them. The fact of the matter is you have an office of the Auditor General doing its work and coming up with the findings and conclusions. And you also have the entity that reports to you coming to say this is the evidence that we have and this is what we have done to correct the situation as presented to us by the board and of course the executive management. The problem will then be to say to the AG, change your report, which you have as the executive. You can't, because you don't want to interfere with the work of the Auditor General. The problem will then to say, for instance, and therefore executive don't include the AG's report, because it has got to be like that according to the laws, it has got to be included as it is. But then we have a platform, we are here today,
and we are actually trying to explain exactly that this is what happened, and probably this might have been the flaw either from the office of the AG or our side this way, but we are saying these are the flaws, and this is the information that we are presenting to the representatives of the people of South Africa, and I think that is exactly what we are trying to do here, and would request that we be understood in that context, that we're actually trying to say, good as the report is saying this, and we can't instruct the AG to change the report. If they say we find out the report, this is a report, we can't. But at the same time, indeed, it came to our attention as the executive. We had meetings together with PRASA and the executive, and the chairperson of the board, to say what are the issues, and they explained them to us. We anticipated before the final report that probably there will be changes, but there aren't changes. And therefore, we are at this stage. But we are here as executives to say, we accept the report of the AG, but we would want to say, these are the issues that we're raising. This is what actually happened. Probably there are flaws somewhere, because we can't say we wouldn't have taken a decision not to include the AG's report in our report, because that will then not be an annual report as per the legislation. So we have had to include it. And we are trying to explain as to what happened to this. As a matter of fact, Chairperson, our own view is to even say there was a target that we could not meet. Probably we met 89% of it. We believe that it is important for us to say 89% of that is this, and the 21% of that, or the 39% of what we did not achieve is this. Because I think it is important for us to say that. And this is exactly what we are here to say. So if we are aware of these challenges, it came to our attention. They put us in a very difficult situation. It's something that we think as the executive going forward has got to take up with probably the office of the AG, so that we do not find ourselves in this situation going forward. And probably it's things that can actually be corrected within the difference between the department and the office of the AG. Thank you.
Yeah, maybe Comrade Deputy Minister, let's say cut down to the bone. Are we here dealing with a situation where the AG in auditing could not find the requisite evidence that confirms delegation until up to a point where they write their report and submit it, and then receive evidence after their report has been written and they are not able to change it? Or are we saying the Auditor General reviewed evidence, saw facts, and chose to ignore those facts?
I'm definitely not saying the Auditor General saw facts and just decided not to acknowledge those. But the point maybe one is making is that...
I'm just saying, what are we dealing with? So that we can, all of us who are not there, have sense and be able to say, then how do we deal with it?
The auditing is a process. It goes according to different stages and levels, up to a time where you then agree that this is the product. If that process is not followed to the data, to an extent where you say, we all agree that this is a product, where as a management you are able to say, indeed, we are agreeing with you on this, even if we have evidence, but we are agreeing with you that this happened, then it becomes a problem. Maybe the point that is being made in this meeting is that There were meetings between the group CFO, and they said this is the situation, and it was agreed upon between the Audit General and the CFO that we're going to correct this. But the product is no longer including that, and that is what I'm trying to say. It's a process. The auditing is not just a one-day thing. It's not an overnight thing. It happens, and it happens at different levels. As a matter of fact, even as the executive, we are briefed
and we'll raise issues because we'll be having executive members present to raise those issues. Until such time that you read, you cover all the steps of the process and then come up with a product that talks to all the steps, then it becomes a problem. If the executive management of Oppressa is actually saying, we're not given an opportunity to look at the very final product, which is part of the process, probably that is a shortcoming which is what must be corrected. I think that is exactly what I am saying.
No. I heard you very well. I was just saying the issue in front of us. Because paragraph 2.2 of the briefing notes from the Auditor General seemed to say the same thing about PASA, that they didn't give us their final draft so we can review. PASA is saying the Auditor General did not give us their final report so we could see. Now, I'm trying to think very fast in terms of what we need to do, because we would not want a situation where anybody misleads Parliament. It's a very serious matter to come before Parliament and say things that are not true. And the unfortunate part of it is that we sitting this side, we are struggling with what happened because we're not there. And yet we have always worked and relied on the reports and the professionalism of the Auditor General Office. And we had, on one or two occasions, had disputes of more or less a similar nature. And they have always all been resolved. But you see, this is not natural science, so you don't follow the same route, that the same quantity, the same room temperature, the same period of time will give a similar reaction. It's social science, human beings. So, I'm thinking we need to resolve this. We can't leave it hanging. And we only have one day, which is next week Wednesday. That's the only day we have. because I suspect that we'll probably need the Auditor General and PASA. And maybe have this information, especially around the exchanges that were there, what has happened, and then to be able to confirm for ourselves that indeed this is the position. And mind you, we were talking about one point. Well, so we're not talking about everything that is in this annual report so far, unless we are still going to dispute around the first question. Is it 35 or 54? Because that was another area of arithmetic that we're struggling with. First question, performance information target. Were they 35 or 56? The annual report says, from the Auditor General, says 56. And the CEO says, no, these are 35. And here we are again. I think, anyway, let's continue. So we'll be thinking as we continue in terms of how we work our way around that. Or maybe we're going to uncover other areas of dispute, because it's like we're stumbling on them as we move on, so that when we come, we could maybe deal with the totality of everything.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm not sure whether when you say we should continue, we'll get something different, because seemingly it's the same. If it was for my view, I would say, Chairperson, I think we've done what we're supposed to do, and support to check if next week we could be able to get PASA in the office of the AG. But then, one maybe we'll just want to check in terms of these contacts.
Let me check with Honorable Singh. because if it's comfortable with that, then we could take that as a basis for our way forward. Would you want to pursue your line, or you feel that we should maybe have a later engagement next Wednesday?
Thank you, Chairperson. No, I agree that we have to engage on some of the issues that remain unresolved, specific issues. But where I will not agree is that we terminate the hearing now, because arising out of some of the questions I may have and other colleagues may have, there probably would be the need for clarity, and that clarity can be given to us next week. But I don't think we've come to the dead end yet, with a few bumps on the road. And as we go along, if we come to the dead end, then I think we can take the decision to adjourn until next week.
Okay.
Chairperson, maybe because we still have to go back to the targets. You remember that you said we will engage when the of his office is here. But I think I just have one question out of this contract. Others will discuss them probably next week when we meet. To check, actually, why was this contract extended, this sequence, besides the other things? Why? What was the reason which was making the NCT to say that we're extending this contract?
Better. Actually, these are contracts of what we call in the rail industry OEMs. These are the people who supply certain parts that they have certain right to. In general, if you go out, once they tender the contract, if you go out on tender, it's pretty much the same companies who participate in that space. That could be one of the reasons, probably in the majority of cases, why it is extended.
Okay, because the next question it will
well, tendering will just be a waste of time. Yeah. So just renew.
I
wanted the most substantive response and just say, you know, these are companies that suppliers with certain, you know, services, and if you tender, they will be the only ones who apply.
Sir, can I just add, break it down? The first major issue, of course, is business continuity to continue operations. Let me give a company like No Brands. It's a company that the manufacturer brakes. So it supplies, it deals with based on the claims, little safety and everything. So when you require, for example, a service, and that if you've got certain rights on those, so it means also that the trade, for example, the brakes you want into that particular trade will come from No Brands. Usually that you are offered, you don't want to go out on tender, same company, the specifications are all there. So you do that, the business or operational continuity is a very important consideration that you put into this. If, for example, provides what you call the windows and the door mechanism on the current fleet of trains. So you look at those. So what will happen is that the people will say, as an example, that if you have a strike, let's say in Cape Town, as the CEO of our rail division said, what you do as an emergency, you try to say, you are going to ask a company that is in that space, because these people have been trained, they're working on that industry, they know our operation, they can prevent cable theft and all of those things. So you do that within a particular level. My job in terms of the policy, it's first to assess whether it is justified. It can look, for example, as to whether the cost, like if someone comes and says 1% and they come with a variation of over 10%, I'll then start to ask the relevant question, why do we extend to that process? But most importantly, what I think is very important, the official does not have, where we say that, because in a business like ours, we extend contracts now and then. But we emphasize that even if the policy says the group CEO must approve, it doesn't mean that as a group CEO, I take a decision, I want to also extend. It means that
The people who do that, in line with our policy, then motivate to the relevant committee. That relevant committee, whether it's in a division or a subsidiary, will then look at that issue and then it's recommended that I still have to apply on a mine. This time instead is, I'll sign it off. In some instances, I'll say not approved because you've got them. And then finally, she will say, well, maybe in this space, we've seen there's an emergence of other players in the industry. Maybe it is a time to open up. But the long and short of it is that will our operations be disrupted if, for example, we don't continue with a particular activity? And that comes to the heart of ultimately the decision that you make. Thank you.
Yeah, no, I think the issue raised by the issue which around which we are in dispute is whether those who extended had the authority or not. I think that is the point. Right?
I had the response, but one of the most important thing that we do as members of parliament is legislation. And I think an entity of this magnitude like this one should have systems in place for the entity to be able to deal with issues that comes in terms of supply base, agency, stuff like that. But the problem is that there's a contravention of legislation, and which we have really seen it in many entities or even departments, that it can be normal, but we've got legislations and entities or department will not be able to say that, you know, we should respect our own laws. That's the problem. Because now we are contravening everything and then we'll say it was an issue of images. We cannot go on like that, Chairperson. I think I have just raised it at the level of a member of parliament, besides being a member of public accounts committee member. But as a member of parliament, we've got to respect the laws of this country. I think we should. I think the person I just wanted to state that before we go on back to the, I think we'll go back to the tariff. I don't know whether I'll be able to. KB has been able to brief the lady in terms of, or should I ask the question again in terms of there was a dispute.
Ask the question.
But can you be allowed to respond to the first issue, not a different issue?
Issue on
the last comment made by the Honourable Member.
Legislation.
Indeed, Chair.
I thought that was a statement.
But Chair, I think that the statement is, I think that the principle that has been made, I think that is something that we support. But it's part of legislation, Chair, that we have an agency of deviation and everything, and that is why we have a policy and a system in the company that does with it. So I think that the yes, Honourable Chilani, the specific issues that are raised on the seat, we do accept. But I also do not want us to leave it as if it's a general practice. If you look at the amount of contracts we issue, it's actually that Pravav adheres to the law to both the procurement, the provincial procurement policy, as well as the PFA, as approved by Parliament. So I want to ensure that we are not engaging in these things and breaking the law willingly. I want to assure honourable members on that issue.
All right. Yes.
As the person. I'm fine with that. The person, we go to the first question. Achievement of planned targets. The AG has reported that out of 56 planned targets for the financial year under review, RASA has not been able to achieve 29 targets. This represents the 2% of the total plan targets that were not achieved. And this was mainly due to the fact that indicators and targets were not suitably developed during the strategic planning process. And then my question is that, did the entity ensure that they follow the SMART principle when they were setting their target, their strategic plan? And to check why these plans were not realistic and achieved. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll attempt to answer again.
No. No. You don't have to answer again. Our issue was arithmetic. Whether they are 35 or 56 targets. The the entity believes that it has set for itself the defined target. And somehow you came to 56. How does this counting become complicated?
If I may ask, sir, on the annual report that we audited, it was clear that there were 56 target. And again, this matter was raised way before the audit report was signed. And of this one, it was discussed, and I don't remember any formal dispute that came from ATRASA to say that the annual report that we audited or the way that we counted the targets that we audited was incorrect. I am getting this from here.
Okay, I think, thanks very much. This is the first time we've raised this issue. I personally met with the audit, unfortunately, at that time, you're not there. You joined the, I met with the audit team. And so, can, I don't know if you'll allow me to go into details and what we've raised with the auditors on this issue.
Let's do this. Our dispute is around numbers.
Okay. So what we required, and I know what there are two things that I think, of course, would result into that. I'm talking, and the honourable member there said the programs, we've got PRASA programs on the left-hand side. We then have got what PRASA must deliver in the year under review, which is output and outcome. That, those are the 35. Then you've got where you put in the different targets, which I think that's what the auditors have done, because they include not only numbers, but they include dates and all of those issues that are there, which is they are quantitative and qualitative. Now, so I think that is the measured target in performance, which I think that's what the auditors did. Then the auditors took about 45% of what we presented, okay, and did an audit onto that. Now, I said, consistent with what you do on the numbers, the issue on the performance thing cannot be done on the basis of, what is it called, on the basis of a sample, because then it's an actual thing. If you do that, you must say, we have 46% audited, here's the evidence onto that, because that must be based on audit evidence. It can't be based, it can't be based on that. Let me give just two examples to illustrate the point. So they're both qualitative and quantitative, you can't reduce them, and I said the methodology is wrong. The team went back and said they'll come back, and that is ended up in the audit report. So these are the things we're talking about here.
So, if you count from page 47, you still count to 35.
It will give me 35. If I break down, for example, on the signaling, in fact, it should give us 39 to be more precise.
So what is it, 35, 39?
Okay, I'll speak with 35, but I'm simply saying that if you look at our national signaling program, it is broken into three phases, so that will change the number. But
is there no other point that can be broken down into phases, which will then take us to 56? I'm just saying we might be quibbling over something that really is neither here nor there, except that if you raise a dispute when we're in a meeting, we cannot just turn a blind eye to it. But I'm just saying.
I'm not sure, but let me say you say you're going to build the patient, and you put the way you're doing it is I'm going to build 11 stations, you build 7, you have delivered 11,
sure.
And I'm accounting committee and explain that.
Yeah.
But where you say, for example, that you have a qualitative measure that you find, for example, you put a date, okay, and you are not going to be able to do that. Secondly, where, for example, you put a date and say, I'm going to do this thing by July, or 31st of March, I deliver this on the 1st of July, I deliver this on the 1st, but you've created infrastructure. How do I explain it? It can't be reduced to that. And these are issues that, in fact, that it doesn't truly reflect. And that is why I'm saying that, so this is one part of the methodology. The second part of it is what I think Honorable Chilwan has raised, that the targets are said not to be realistic. Now, see, I've gone through the variances on this issue. In fact, I'm very convinced, and this is what I raised with the auditor, that the variances are not so huge. Why they are huge is in respect of infrastructure, because the delivery period has been quite different, and those issues have then been altered. And, you know,
I'm raising this with parents here because I'm trying to avoid a situation where we, I think I respect, we and the Auditor General try to have these issues with those resources. These are the issues that are
coming. I'm sure, CEO, that if we're to allow every official of government to come and present its case before us, vis-à-vis the Auditor General, we'll never come to a conclusion. Nobody wants to have a negative finding on their work. So you agree there's variance, but you feel the variance is not that huge. It's not as huge as it's made out to be. But that's fine, and I don't think that is the point of dispute. I think the issue here, I think there were two things that we raised. It was on those that have not been achieved, what happened? And I think that's where you get the opportunity now to say, look, we did not achieve this, but we're at 80% completion. So it's not like we set a target and did absolutely nothing. That is the opportunity you get to make us then put context to the finding of the Auditor General. So it does not become a dispute, but it becomes an opportunity for you to give us context in terms of this is how far we have gone on this one. And then on this one, we failed completely because of A, B, C, D. But I'm saying that's one side. The actual point of dispute is whether you had 35 targets or 56. And I was saying, you know, when you said that other one, if it's stretched, it can come to the house. Isn't there any other that can be stretched and would end up at 56? Because, I mean, we might be quibbling over all the little things. And, you know, the first entity to say the Auditor General has counted wrong. That's what is making our homes to stand. Because, I mean, really counting, 1, 2, 3.
Can we deliver to the mandate when we sign a shareholders agreement with the Minister of Transport? When the board does that, we are signing on the basis of the output and outcomes that are there. But Chair, I think that we've raised the issue. The point I'm making is that we've raised the issue. We think that should have been taken seriously, and that is why at the beginning I said, you start us when you say, let us then go individually to each one of them and say, what we've done. I mean, one of the issues you've raised, and finally you said, you've put 90%, you achieved 80%. In the accounting that has been done, actually, having a variance of 5 means actually 0. That's what it is. That okay, this one we've achieved, this one we've done 90. I don't think that is correct. I don't think that we want to pursue that. We are now prepared to go to those variances on each one of them and then discuss them.
Sarufan, I think I've taken long and I'll leave it to Adam. I think they've got something to. They've noted some other questions.
All right, let me give honorable thing. I'm giving you your part. Follow up today.
I just want to follow up on some of the, not the numbers, but specific targets that are in the report.
No, that's fine. That
have been met.
No. All I wanted to say was that if I allow you to follow up on what she has raised, then I must allow other members to also make follow-ups specifically on what she has raised. So it's fine. I'll allow you and then any other comrade who has a person to raise.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to refer to some of the specific targets and find out why some of these things are not done. Page 54. Board effectiveness, board surveys. Your target was...
Wait, page 54?
Yeah. Board surveys should have been completed by 2012. No survey was commissioned. This is on the effectiveness of the board, which is a very, very important part of this entire company, proper. So I'd like to know why. What were the reasons that led to that? And the strategic objective managing risk. I think you've got that. So that's why.
Sure. No. Let's do that okay. One. All right. Because we don't have many questions. Board effectiveness, board surveys, target date, September 2012. Not
the
commission.
Chair, I think that the commission, it didn't happen. I think there's been a lot of fluidity in the board for the past. I'm looking at that as a business, but it didn't go down to the level just as people have done it in the previous year. So now there's been a lot of discussion about that. The fund of the audit is correct, and the fund of the pre we undertake to correct.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you, sir. That progress we'll be watching next year when we get your report to see if it was done or not.
Well, if you'll still be here.
Yeah, we live in hope. We live in hope, sir. If you don't live in hope, then you die. Another area is the area of the retirement fund solution. Right? And I think it's all related to your hustles and everything else, or if it's not. You are 50% complete there.
Where are you?
Oh, sorry. Page 47. Under strengthening the financial position of the organization, retirement fund solution.
Just a minute. Must be where you are. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. Now I note there that what the general has said, this project is around 50% complete, and your target date is September 2012. What is the latest position with regard to that? And can you tell us why it hasn't been completed?
Thank you very much. When we deal with retirement funds, we deal with very sensitive matters. We've done quite a number of things. As you know, majority of employees in Prasa fall under the what we call the Transnet Pension Fund. Both the two funds that are there. That is before we, of course, inherited those. Metro Rail mainly, Autopex on the budget side, the long-distance rail services, we'll have that. Then we have what we call the South African SRTC at what we call a provident fund. So the board of Tata then took a decision that must consolidate those because of the exposure we have into those particular issues. We then, of course, had to start a long process of negotiations with the union. As you know, that for the fund to work, you need the sufficient number so that it can be in a far better position. We've had long negotiations with the unions. In the last 3 months ago, we have moved further to take a step. After we've now done the detailed analysis of the numbers, how much do we need, for example, if someone had to move from one fund to the other, the legal requirements that are there. So I think the process of negotiations, but we've set ourselves a target said that with everything complete, that should be done by March of this particular year.
Yeah, I don't know if my memory is me correctly, but is this related to a court declaratory and there was a union taking, was it Transnet and things like the pension fund? Is it related in any way to that?
Yes, but not directly. In 2005-2006, when Metro Rail had to be transferred, one of the major things is that one of the unions had very strong objections to the matter, because they said that we came in the pension fund of Transnet, we should be strengthening it, and I think that they had the case. And it resulted in a massive strike out of that. At that time, Metro Rail was part of Transnet. What we are seeing is that we are a sub, we've got a sub fund within those Transnet funds, which means about half of our own employees are found in other funds. We contribute, but we don't actually control even the investment decisions that are made there. We don't have, but I think the union point is correct. So out of the two unions, one is willing support, the other one says there's no way we can support that. We can support that. So we not started the fund when the numbers actually did not support. So this is an ongoing work, but we are hopeful as well that by March we'll be able to register a one single retirement fund for Prasa.
Thank you, Chair. On revenue generation, page 47, and I'll link it to also on page 47, your optimal bus fleet for autopacks. I see that you say this will be completed by November 2013. I suppose you mean 2012. So that's an error there. Yeah. So it's completed 2012. Because, and then it links to the revenue, the shortfall in your revenue at the bottom. Because in 2010 you bought 200 or 250 buses that you had financed for the World Cup. What's happening with them? Because as you don't have permits for many of them. Is it some of it a loss to the state or to the company?
Chair, we are going to answer in two ways. I'm going to deal with the bigger one, responding to that, and ask the CEO of our rail division to talk about the turnaround that we've implemented about 2 years ago. So we bought 560 buses. So to be more precise, we bought 520 and 50 were leased.
and those buses were coming in the following year from government. They got 797 million rands, and that the difference of that out of the 1.42 billion rands, we then finally through a debt, which was managed by Mercedes-Benz. These buses were for the 2010 FIFA World Cup. And as you recall, Chair, that this is one of the things which we performed during the time to move the FIFA family. 420 of those buses were what we call semi-luxury, to deal particularly with international people, and about 110 of those buses were for the purposes of what we call commuter coming to the stadium. So we found that in that way. Unfortunately, what happened is that this was a government decision. When after the World Cup, a number of options had already been agreed. One of those was that we should give part of those buses to the professional soccer league or SAFA, so that they can use about 18 of those buses, and that some of the 110 buses, if the municipality exercise their right, they can buy into some of those buses. After the World Cup, what we did, with our own exercise, we found that we've got the excess buses. I think that if you take the new buses we bought, the old buses, we also end up with just over 120 buses that we have in our own system. And the main issue here is that we find that from the operation side, after we did which issue what the CEO deal with, that some of the buses were not given what you call operating licenses, both for cross-border as well as for that. Those buses remain standing. And then the last initial year, we took a decision that excess buses, we must dispose of them because it costs us money. And I think that's what I want the CEO of our bus company to do that. But in the meantime, as you can see the numbers here, we also reduced that debt because at some stage, from over 500, we took it to about just over 400 million. And now, in December, the board approved that we pay an additional 248 million rand. So we've reduced that to more affordable. I think that is a burden onto autostat bus operations, but we've since restructured that as part of our balance sheet restructuring. Mr. Council?
Thank you, Chair. You'll have to excuse my nervousness. My first time at school. So nervousness is not about not telling the truth. Thank you. Currently, Chair, we have a fleet of 570 buses. Out of the 570, 110 are the main commuter buses that, as the CEO has said, are reserved for Metro Rail. So we use those buses to support the rail division, which brings us to a 460 buses that we operate as autopay. And these buses are divided between the luxury, about 200 luxury buses that are used by Translux and the balance being used by City to City. We currently stand that there are about 210 permits, national permits, which means that we can legally operate about 210. But what we tend to do is that we are able to operate more than 210 buses because we rely mostly on charter permits that we get from municipalities from various provinces where we operate from. The current challenge that we have for us that the long distance transportation is very cyclical. On a daily basis, we'll operate about 200, just over 200 buses. You come to Friday or on holidays, long weekends, so everyone is traveling and you're able to get up to over 450, in fact, the entire fleet operating. So it's really cyclical. But what we are doing, Chair, is that when we are not operating all these buses, we have put in place measures to try and get as much revenue as possible. As we speak to you, we have about 40 buses that we have leased on short-term basis to Sotswana, where they are paying us about 5 million rand a month just to keep those buses going. We are in discussions with City of Metro Bus, where we'll be loaning them about 6 of those buses to keep them operating. And finally, we are engaging with various provinces to make sure that we have requisite permits to be able to optimally operate a fleet of buses. It's possible, as you have seen with the charter permits that we have, that we are able to operate the majority of these buses where we tend to have duplicates, or even having four buses going in one direction. Obviously, this is based on the demand, but we are not being able to do this because we simply don't have permits. But we are hoping that with the engagement, this can be thing of the past.
All right.
think that's fine. I do sit at home driving to Joburg every day. Okay, honorable thing.
No, Chair, is there any other question related to...
What? Any... No, continue. No.
Okay, thank you, Chair, for sure. I'm surprised there's honorable entry today. Continue. Chairperson, I think
that's very unlike him.
Yeah. I think Honorable Silwana dealt with many of the issues that relate to supply chain and expenditure management. There's just one area, the fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I think that's item 25 to the value of $3.4 million. Can we just find out who the employees were?
On which page?
On page 43 of the AR.
Okay.
3 point was intended. Disciplinary proceeding is not timely undertaken for suspended employees. And then I think you can talk to late payment as well, more than 30 days, because this has become quite a concern to not only SCOPA but also portfolio committees when suppliers don't get paid within 30 days, especially the new suppliers, SMMEs and small and, yeah, those kinds of people. So maybe 24 and 25 on the expenditure management, if we can have some response.
Thank you, Chair. There are a few issues which were raised obviously as fruitless and wasteful expenditure. I'll give you a breakdown of what they're made up of. We had a fleet vehicle hire, which we used for maintenance purposes of our rail tracks and other aspects. From that area, we had incurred...
Wait a minute. Is it not reflected anywhere in the annual report, in the notes?
Is it reflected?
No, I'm asking you. I know I...
Oh, okay. Let me look first in the notes if it's there.
Fruitless and wasteful?
Yes.
Okay, now...
It's reflected.
No, it's not broken down, which is...
Yes.
Which is also not very standard, you know. In the notes...
The notes in the
financial... Yeah, it's here on page 97, but it's just not 37. It just states. And then you have the figure. It does not have the breakdown. No, continue, because I thought the breakdown should be here, and then you could then go into the reason.
Oh, okay. I think with the engagement in terms of the reporting, it was decided to consolidate, but otherwise we've got the breakdown, which I'm going to share with you.
All right, okay.
Yeah, we've got fleet vehicle hire. I think it's 1.757 million. It's basically around vehicles which we have for maintenance of our truck, and on that one, we incurred some penalties around the non-payment on time. I want to highlight one thing. If members can recall, we submitted a budget with a deficit. But I think we need to be very honest that we do have cash flow problems from time to time, because when you've got a deficit budget, you need to generate enough cash. And if the cash is not there because of your revenue generation capability as well as the support from government in a form of subsidy, you are bound at times to go into situations whereby you struggle to settle some of your obligations, although we are managing that situation. Now, in this case, we ended up having to incur penalties of 1.75 million. The next one is electricity. What we have done maybe before I move out of that is that we have taken ownership of most of the vehicles now being run internally to avoid those lease agreements, which caused us a lot of headaches. The next one is electricity rates and taxes. On this one, as you are aware, the rates went up extensively higher than what we would say the inflation adjustment. And we do struggle in terms of also sorting out our costs in terms of the budget that we have and those approved and the funding that we got. We are currently in negotiations with municipalities for longer payment terms because they are very strict, as you know, 30 days you have to pay, otherwise there is an interest charge. We did incur about 3.449 million on that due to electricity rates and taxes. The other one is West Bank Sewer, again in penalties, two million we incurred, obviously due to also our inability to meet some of the obligations on time. We are going for centralization of the payments to manage them properly, though sometimes it is not entirely because we don't have the money, but also some of the processes which internally we needed to manage. So we thought we should do that. The rest to be four suppliers, whereby we had failed to pay on time due to cash flow issues, which adds up to 1.1 million.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. I want to move to internal controls.
Yeah, or maybe before you move to that, let's hear the CEO and maybe you could get further clarity, because all of these essentially are penalties. When I get fined, they are penalties. And if you have penalties that amount to 3 million or 2 million, it means that it has been over a period of time. And he has been saying, I got to roll down cash flow.
It's,
you have no money.
Chair, indeed, I think that is an important point, and thanks for the opportunity. I think that the government directive is very clear for us to pay small businesses, particularly those with invoices of a million or below, because these are businesses that are starting from the base. I think that is a major issue. Mr. Gaston, of course, did indicate that he's talking about the cash flow. The big question here is that, are we as PRASA a fully funded business, in the sense that are you getting the full subsidy and are you recovering all the money that is there? And you find that on both sides of the divide, there is of course a shortfall. On our side, management is to ensure that we collect as much as possible, reduce fundraising to cover that. But we've got also legal mandate. As things stand right now, and we what has been driving our deficit budget, which impacts on our cash, is the fact that we are running the long distance rail services, which has not been fully funded. I think that when we did the due diligence exercise, it required us to spend per annum would require 1.2 billion rand to run that service. It's not funded, it has not been funded for a while, and effectively, we had to rob Peter to pay Paul. That's what has happened. I think that is one point. We are happy to share that with the medium-term budget statement, we've seen a very positive move where the Minister of Finance then shifted, approved the shifting of 650 million rand into the long distance side. The only concern we have is that money was shifted from capital and into operation. But we think that it will actually give us into a much better position. So some of the things I think that we deal with, let's take raise taxes and everything. When we get the deal, the municipalities pay us within 30 days, even where there's a dispute. For certain instances, for example, in Tshwane, Durban, where it's imposed, irrespectively, what is it called. So some of them, we find that they're not even within the 120 days or beyond, that within even the 60-day period that is, but we do pay the interest. But in some instances, as part of our cash management plan or strategy, we do take a decision to say, rather than not deliver or have oil for a bath, you rather then pay within a particular period of time. We have taken a decision to renegotiate, particularly with the bigger suppliers, where we can afford to pay within 60 days. I think these are, for example, a company that refurbish a train. It takes almost 2 months to refurbish a coach. There's no need for us to pay within 30 days. But there's a small business, that requires the cash, that is under pressure, and that's what we're trying to find the balance. But the root of it, Chair, is the fact that you have to make sure that you maximize your revenue, both your fair collection on the one hand, which I think we've been pushing quite aggressively, and it's reflected in the numbers, but on the other side, to make sure that the legal mandate that we have is fully funded. But Carica will say that we are carrying a lot of unfunded mandate, particularly on the long distance side. Let me finally say that we are delivering a major service to municipalities. In fact, that if we do not deliver those services, there will not be a problem in those municipalities. Yet, they've been at the forefront, generally, of raising in the way they evaluate what the railway properties. In the past, railway properties were valued at zero to make sure that you don't increase the cost. Now, our cost of running the service keeps on increasing, but our ability to raise what people pay as fares is quite limited because of the market that we cater for and all of those things. So I think that the cash situation impacts negatively and in some instances, as I said, the fact that you have to make decisions in between, and that's what we've done.
I'm just struggling. The skeptic in me is just struggling with the simple explanation that we just didn't have cash. So we could not pay and therefore incur interest. I'm struggling with that. Because unless if our, you know, how we manage, you know, our processing of invoices has some bottlenecks along the way, because I'm sure that you do a whole range of transactions on a daily basis. And it can be that at some point or for some months there was just no money to pay. I'm just thinking, if you have 2 million as interest, well, of course, depending on the amount, it will not have happened in a month or two. It must have been over a period of time. And I'm just saying, I'm struggling to digest the simple explanation that we just had a cash flow problem, we had no money, and that was it.
You are correct, but again, it's important to take a million over a period of this month, and certainly at current places where we are in the national organization, because there's a period of 12 months, and as well as the root cause is that you build an unfunded mandate. That's one. But two,
you're funded. You are funded. And you, 53% of your...
No,
total budget for the state.
No, Chair, I think the CEO added to you that was the long distance train, which was a mail. Not the other one, the one which is used by the masses.
Called
Shoshalo. Yes, Shoshalo mail. This one is from the time that it was transferred from Transnet to us, and the something that was been engaging with the department of transport, trying to engage a trader in to say, there's a shortfall here. So, in fact,
the one from Nelspruit to Joburg.
Yes, Shoshalo. And the one from Johannesburg to Cape Town. And so, if it's a business, you can say, close it down. And because it's not down, I mean, this is not just a pure business that we are running here, but there is also a responsibility.
Hey, I think I hear you and I understand you. I'm just saying, if we did not pay electricity, for example, what happened? I mean, I'm just saying that, you know, a simple golden with a cash flow problem, I don't think for me it tells the totality of the story. But like I say, we have so many transactions that we're doing. And then you have electricity. Because then we may have to say, which areas were affected? Does it mean that all your offices all over the country, their electricity were not paid? Or is it that there are certain offices where their electricity was not paid? Was it purely because there was no money? Or, I mean, I'm trying to look at how we process various transactions from various offices, whether there are no gaps in this process.
No, thank you. I think that I agree with you. There are gaps. I think that we've seen instances where, for example, we are sitting, let's say a supplier who's involved in a capital riot, we're sitting on huge cash, and the efficiency of the payment hasn't been done. And I think as management, we even dealt with that issue. So yes, I think that is important. When you look at most of this, if you look at your rates and taxes as an example, you get that from your operational subsidy that you get, and that is divided in a number of ways. When you look at the traction energy, we are working directly with Eskom, the energy that we put onto the railway lines, and what we've done is that Eskom within the region, we're involved in discussions where we've agreed to consolidate so that you don't have a situation that account can be managed based on the discussions we say. That is the municipalities.
Yeah.
You may find that, for example, let me give you the story here, emanates mainly from the Durban Municipality, Metropolitan Council. We had, for example, a situation where we had to pay them an amount up front, and then thereafter then there is additional charges that will be imposed. So money in this cause, that's what they are thinking about. And then, of course, as I say, the issue where if we got a dispute, where we say, for example, that the account, it's not right, but they'll continue to impose interest as it is.
No, that's fine. what I'm trying to get around my mind, and I'm sure I'll be able to, is because I don't understand a situation where inefficiencies lead to penalties, and we shield those officials and say, no, we have a cash flow problem. I think that's where I'm at. That's where I'm at. Must not be that when there are inefficiencies within your system, officials then get away with it on the days that they, you know what a struggling entity it is, that is that. So I would say, let us get detailed information on fleet hire, the 1.5 million. Because we're talking penalties, we have not even spoken about the actual amount. We're merely talking penalties, interest on the amount. And the electricity one, yeah, I hear you talk more about Durban, but I'm sure it is not just the TV. What else? What happened? Those breakdowns. And it's West Bank fuel. Because the 1.1, you said it's a combination of a whole host of other minor little, activities. But let's take this three and go to the details and say, this is the history. This is where it started. This is what happened. And this is what was supposed to happen. So we see who was capable for ensuring that these services are not paid on time. Because that is what it says. These are not paid on time. All right, thing.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, I just want to speak a bit about the numbers, and I hope that the question of the unfunded mandate, because it's referred to here on page 46 in the performance report, that the Deputy Minister might be able to throw some light a little later on this unfunded mandate that we've been talking about, the long-distance passenger, and what is being done to address the unfunded mandate. Because when I look at the financials here, I see that the transfer had a loss of 156 million rand at the end of March 2013. 156 million rand. Now, and as you said, Chairperson, I mean, 53% of its money comes from government. Now, it seems government's the ATM here. You know, when if you run a loss, well, government, you just go and put your card into the ATM, government ATM, and you draw more money. We want to know about the efficiency of PRASA to run as a profit-making organization without having to rely on state subsidies in the medium to long term.
On which page are you?
I'm just on my briefing notes. I read there. That
I know, I saw it this morning.
Yeah, under the report. And which also brings into question, when maybe somebody can answer at some stage, is PRASA technically insolvent? Because according to our notes here, the liabilities are 6,792,000,000, and the current assets is 5,348,000,000. So that's technically insolvent. Your liabilities exceed your assets from figures that I have before me that I can make available. So maybe one can speak to that as well. Maybe they can speak to it now, sir.
Yeah. Comrade Deputy Minister, I think. Note whatever issues you may want to talk to at the end. I'll give you some time. So just note. But if there's anything you would want to intervene early, that will also be fine.
Can you talk about the 1.6 million dollars and the ATM situation, and then something to talk about the
Chair, I want to draw your attention to page 48, financial management improved financial results. The shortfall that was budgeted for was 593.3 million.
Just demo, page 48.
Page 48 at the top.
Okay. Oh, yeah. Yes.
So instead of having almost 600 million rent loss, we've cut it to 156 million rent. And I think Chair is a very positive performance. I'll deal with that, Chair. The loss is very clear. If you ask PRASA to run long distance and you don't fund it, and it costs you, let's be specific. The due diligence is 1.2. Okay. The actual cost you've been carrying has been around 870 million rand per annum. Okay. Now, we had written, the chair of the board, based on a board resolution, had written to the shareholder and say,
It's either you fund it or we close it down. So that so the two things, that two choices to be made. It's either you run a long distance.
Let's do this, Leo. Just to clear it. So the loss arises purely from social norms.
So let me say primarily. I don't want to say only.
Okay.
Because even metro rail is not fully funded as you said. But the main driver of the deficit budget based on factoring the 870 million rand that we take onto our bottom line related to socialism.
Right. I wanted you to stress those points. With us one to see loss.
Yes.
Thinking about those things. So you have to emphasize that it's a shortfall in our budget arising out of ABCD.
In which, I think it's primarily that, but as you say that we said even with that loss, and you see that out of all the work we've done in the balance sheet restructuring, and we have, and you see, Chair, when you look at the overview that we provide in the annual report, that we actually have generated over 540 million additional, Chair, and again, is another point we have done well. So our view, when you analyze our report, it actually tells you that PRASA is actually saying that if you want to fund railways, you are funding them from three sources. And I'm using the word general. I'm not talking about freight railways. I'm not talking about passenger railways. All over the world, the cost of building railways are expensive. If you have to pass that to the commuter, actually you're going to push more people. It's going to be cheaper to use a car rather than to use rail. Let me give an example of the Gautrain. Government put 24 billion rand onto that. We are not as a country recovering that from the user. Because if we were to recover each and every cent for infrastructure operations, then the government transport objective of a better public transport or promoting public transport over private car use will be different. Secondly, Chair, if we were to take the point that we must get Brasa to be profitable, easy to do it today. But because of the long distances...
No. I think we understand you. We hear you. What we wanted was the initial explanation. What is the basis of a shortfall? So we understand the fact.
Yes, but sir, the suggestion has been made that 10 parts have come to a point where it doesn't rely on subsidies. The answer is that Metrorail, Shisholoza Main, will always require subsidies. Because the way you're going to fund your rail system is basically on fundamental on three things. Is the subsidies from government? Second is going to be a real estate side of things, which I think that there are no reports explain how you're trying to unlock that. And this is how it's mainly going to come from other revenues, such as your fair revenue, as it is. And the balance between the three becomes very important. But in our country, Chair, if we say we want today to recover each and every cent and get PRASA to be full operational, what is going to happen is that you're going to increase the cost of someone coming from Soweto to town quite permanently. So I don't think that it can be done.
Okay. Yeah, I'm sure we also, last week, the riot in Brazil, from the free transport movement, demanding free transport, that can only come from public subsidy. So, yeah,
Chairperson, and I take that point, but and I don't want to belabor it, because there's a difference between subsidies and an injection from government. Because private companies also receive subsidies from government. Private bus companies are receiving contracts and subsidies. But where they make a loss as a company is a different point. So let's not belabor the point. There's a difference between subsidies and making a loss as a company, a loss. But I take the point of that Shosholoza Mail is the main contributor to the losses that the PRASA sustains. And I think I take that point.
Chair, thanks very much, Honorable Singh. So we are the only entity that actually has never asked for an injection, despite all the difficulties. And I think that is something that we have to look. How did we run this entity without asking for an injection? And I think that you can see that if we have an opportunity to go into how we implement our strategy, you actually see the value that we've created for the state, particularly on the asset side. If you look on the how the investment property side, we've tried to restructure that from over 900 million rand, with the work we've done is sitting on the balance sheet at about 2.5 billion rand. And that's where we're trying to close the gaps that are there. But we are not, we think government must support us in restructuring this asset, which is costly. But we have never gone, unlike other entities, and I don't want to mention names, who have asked for injections, because that's not what we're asking for.
Of course, that's what we want to see and hear from public entities, that part, being able to deliver and prove that public entities can swim and not sink. Chair, without debate. Just a minute.
My approach is another moment. I think it's also very important for the honourable members to understand the threat of the people we are serving, our customers. I tell you,
I think that one, we are in agreement. We understand it.
I want to come to fair revenue. Because if I understand the past 6 years or so, we've only able to increase ourselves only once. And I tell you the financial resistance, and in fact, in some instances, even our papers and our assets will go from the line. So, if we to apply the simple business rules in running our business, the simple thing that we look for every year is the final adjustment, but we're not able to plan. So, as we try to understand the shortfall that we have, it's part of the nature of our customers. I just wanted to throw it one in.
No, that's good. We will appreciate that. Not only your customer, but also your own understanding and approach to your money. It's very important. But when we start to have some little money, don't increase the rate. See?
Yeah, Chairman, the Auditor General reports on page 43 that the accounting authorities did not annually submit reports to Treasury on the financial misconduct cases. How many financial misconduct cases are there underway, and why were these reports submitted? But when I deal with investigations later, and particularly the public protector, I think I will go into a little more detail of the investigations that are underway. Because there are lots of investigations here over the last 3 years that have not been finalized as yet. Some serious ones and serious allegations. And I'm not saying they're at fault, but they're still under investigation. But why are some of these cases not reported to the Auditor General?
I just want to answer the first part where the honourable member asked a question to say, is PRASA technically insolvent? I think I just want to highlight that, obviously it's a technical question. If you look at the numbers, if we were to do a bit of ratios, I think our current ratio is 1.07 and our debt ratio is 0.17. In terms of benchmark, we cannot say whether that is the right one or not to determine whether you're technically insolvent or not, because we don't have the benchmarks. But the other issue is also the way we account in terms of certain liabilities. For example, the government subsidy. In terms of IAS International Accounting Standards 20, we are required to account it in terms of a deferred income method. To an extent, that certain portion of the government subsidy is recorded as a liability, but in essence, I don't think it is a real liability per se. So, as from this audited numbers, PASA is technically solvent, it's not insolvent.
You say so? Just the financial misconduct cases?
No. What's wrong?
From the figures that they have, the assets, the liabilities exceed the assets by far.
I don't expect you to give it so easily.
The liabilities that have been listed, is 6.7 billion. That's the figures we've got here. And the assets are 5.3 billion. So on the basis of liability exceeding assets, what conclusion does one draw? Somebody who has got a limited knowledge in accounting, what do you draw? If my liabilities exceed my assets, I'm technically insolvent. And these are the figures given to me, unless the figures are wrong. So that's why, I said, if he says so, then maybe they've got different figures or the accounting system.
Of clarity, if you recall from our numbers, our total asset value is sitting at 1.9 billion for the year ended. Our liabilities are sitting at 29.58 billion in total. But I would assume you're looking at the current assets and current liabilities. And that's where I've mentioned that there is a portion within that which is basically deferred income accounting method, which is basically government subsidy. And what we are saying, we only release that when we depreciate the asset which I've created. So at the end of the day, looking at the ratios which I've also mentioned in terms of the debt ratio and the current ratio, one could not, I think it's a debatable issue to say what is the benchmark you're using to determine technical insolvency. And at the end of the day, I think from the point of the agent ourselves, we are not technically insolvent.
Maybe Chair, what will help if we just get something in writing on this. from this current assets, current liability to deferred income and refer us.
We'll note that one of those gray areas.
Yes.
Because we can't come here and start the debate that you have in management correspondence with the Auditor General. What is important is to be able to ensure that we tighten things up and move on. So I'll just have that noted down as one of the clear areas that to be cleared.
The financial misconduct, sir.
No. Yeah. I think let's talk to the financial misconduct in terms of reporting, because he started with the insolvency issue, but the question that you had asked now was about the reporting of financial misconduct cases. Why are they not reported to National Treasury? Why have they not been reported? CEO, throw your hand up. You want to talk to that? That's the question on the table now. Let's not go back to the insolvency.
Chair, I must admit that maybe it's an error now, but that was not reported.
Not maybe.
It is, but most of the time it's because investigations are underway. You need to conclude the matters properly before you can really conclude.
Okay, after the conclusion, have they been reported? When you're still investigating,
yes.
You can't say it is misconduct until you finally concluded the investigation itself.
That's right. So I think by the year end, the majority of the issues were still under investigation.
And the minority of the issues
were concluded. There could be a few issues which have missed out and not admitted, and we must accept and take responsibility that we should have actually submitted. But going forward, we'll do exactly that.
Strike one, chair for the committee. Chairperson, internal control.
Yeah.
I mean, is management satisfied with internal controls? And I'm saying this in the view of, see, the office of the AG, we all know, just does some audits. They can't audit every transaction that is included. And we've noted from documents that we have that the portfolio committee picked up certain items which are not in the report of the Auditor General, but they relate to invoices from non-VAT vendors, payment made for SOFI consultants, and bank reconciliations not done, etc., etc. These are issues that were picked up by the portfolio committee. Now, we as COPA, we only look at the report of the Auditor General, and we are thankful to the portfolio committee. They pick these matters up. What I'd like to know is how efficient is your internal control system to be able to pick up these? Are there issues that you have picked up outside of what the AG has picked up that you can bring to the attention of this committee that are quite significant, and how have you dealt with them?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, sir. I think the organization has been control and in institutional arrangements. Amongst other, for example, deepening the internal organization and its approach to investing as a company to directly own a public business, look at that. And we know that... I first basic analysis, Chair, the answer that we are talking by hearing this function and accepting the organization to make sure that the procedures of the company are taken care of.
No, that's not my question. My question is, in relation to building internal capacity,
right,
vis-a-vis outsourcing it,
right,
have you done a cost-benefit analysis? That's, for me, in line with what I was asking you, that's where cost-benefit analysis will come in. So we think it's better to be outsourced than if we do it internally. But if you're not answering that, it's a question that remains.
Thanks, Chair. We actually did. When we look at what would be the benefit of the of having what we call a cold sourcing model, where we appoint foreign companies to help us do, for example, strength and control and everything. In the previous financial year, we had Deloitte. We've now appointed Season Saluba and everything, and so that instead of having a big team,
Season Saluba, Gobodo,
which, you know,
and that was allegedly made out, wasn't as a result of any investigation.
And which, may his soul rest in peace. In fact, he was one of the people who were doing the rolling stock. He was our, what we call, our probity officer. That is why we shocked when that was done on the rolling stock, when we buy the new train, to make sure that we have integrity. So when we talk about control, of course, one of the central issues that we do relates to management reviews. Both of your financials, as well as other things. We do that, when we do our management account and everything, we do that monthly. If you look secondly, I think that the auditor general in the past had raised questions that were not consistent in respect of, for example, some of the reconciliations that we did. But one of the major findings they made, they said, where you have responded to our findings in the previous financial year. But some of the measures we put in place, we put it there in response, but when you look at the effectiveness of those so basically there's been a criticism that you address the problem but not the root cause of the problem. We've accepted that, Chair, and said that this management is an area of improvement around us. Overall, when we look, for example, at our IT controls environment, this took us, for example, end in the year, that there were weaknesses around that. We've gone out of our way to address those issues there. So, Chair, I think that I could go on and all in all.
You will preempt all the questions.
So I wanted to assure honorable members that when you look at your controlled environment, and again, for me, I talk to someone who was part of the process of establishing what we have. It's a business that didn't have one common system because they were incorporating quite a number of things. And if you stand today, I want to say that yes, it's an ongoing thing because we are not going to achieve it and do that. But Chair, I think that we've brought the systems. We've made sure that the security of our ICT system is quite good. We've made sure that the allocation of resources is done in a manner. For example, if you look at how we allocate our resources, one of the key things in the past is dependent who can maybe know within a business for their own project. We realize that actually it's not working. We then have to bring in a privatization model that shows the return on investment that we do, so that's on the capital side. And I think that our procurement system, our supply chain management policy, is actually the one that we did with National Trade Project exactly. We have amended it twice to close the door. And I think for those controls, I'm satisfied that the best interest of the product.
But what we want, Bob Tilly, is to build internal capacity to do things. One public be public. And not like one entity where we actually told officials maybe we should call the consultants and question them because they are doing everything and yet you are there. And I'm looking at your payment, audit fee, internal audit, 16 million. Right, my question was, till when? So I want that, let's have a journey, let's have a timeline. You must build internal capacity. We must build internal capacity.
Chip.
Yeah, I just said that to them. The portfolio coming from transport has also been very hard on that. On a continuous basis, we are looking at it, but I think the project is at a time frame. We do have to cut it, we are going to shoot. There's a lot of internal capacity. We are big doing that.
Unless there's time frame for me, it will be a journey ad infinitum.
Can I add? I think that the 16 million on the audit fees, of course, unfortunately, we decided that we should separate that because it was distorting our audit fees. These are mainly special investigations that we ask auditors, particularly at that time Deloitte, to undertake for us as PRASA. So they are not the normal auditing process that are there. In this core facility, we maintain, we still have a team of PRASA that is internal, but what the research is core facility model, precisely because it's both internal capacity, and this is reviewed every 3 years. We appoint them over a 3-year period, and when we think that we are sufficient, particularly for business at our level, it's very important that we take that decision over a period of time. So, yes, we do it over 3 years, but are we going to have a situation where an organization like PRASA, even the Auditor General, you recall, until 2 years ago, they were actually appointing external entities to investigate that?
No, let's not go there. Let's not go there. All I'm saying is, let's have a process to build internal capacity. That's the bottom line. What will take you, as long as we are satisfied as Parliament that you are doing your best to achieve that objective, we'll be happy. But we want that journey. And I get your point about the 16 million. But then what that will mean, it will mean that your costs internal auditors, either aren't able to do the investigations themselves, or actually there are a lot of issues that need to be investigated. Meaning that you have the policies, but there is always no proper monitoring and management. So there are a lot of deviations that require you to, from time to time, do investigation, which might be talking to quality of management.
Thank you. Just on that, a cost-benefit analysis would be the cost of outsourcing versus internal capacity, and it hasn't been done, as far as I can hear. And that's the only way we would get a cost-benefit analysis as we move forward.
No, my understanding is...
Has that been done, to set up your own unit, internal control unit?
My understanding is that there is a process to build internal capacity. But I think what is missing has been time frame. We're not debating whether public should be public. But we're saying, let's have a time frame. Because without a time frame, we can become pedestrian in our forward movement. Yeah.
So there have been a number of investigations, one of which is reported in the report of the Audit General, which is a recent one where the public protector is involved. But I'd just like to talk about, before I get to that one, there have been investigations in the 2010-11 financial year. Conducted into the alleged misappropriation of funds by employees in the corporate estate solution division of PRASA. And then I think you know what the aim was, to investigate whether funds were utilized for intended purposes. Then there was another investigation conducted into irregularities committed by an employee on projects and possible procurement irregularities in 2011-12. Can we just get an update on those two before I come to the one that's reported in the current annual report?
Thank you, Chair. I'm going to ask the CEO in our prospectus division. We did institute that investigation. It was done by Deloitte. It came up with a number of results. One, we found that we're losing a lot of revenue, particularly with our tenants at station. That is one issue that we found. And second, we found that we were involved in the building projects. But our what they call project managers were actually found to be not either applying themselves or had variances, or in some instances what conduct would constitute as or regarded as collusion. We took that report seriously, Chair, and I think that I did praise the CEO of our railway, of our Pathacres division, which is very new itself, and we found it just over 2 years ago. I put him on suspension and subsequently we fired him from the company. And through that, the CEO, we have suspended quite a number of people. Most of those were put on disciplinary, and some of those, I think that is, were subsequently fired for that. We then formed a completely new team on the project side, because we realized the people that we had were not the right people. So I think part of what the chair said, that we won't spend 60 million on special investigation, not a normal audit fee. It actually tells you a problem, and so we agree fully with that view. And what we've decided is that there are people who are inside our business,
who are not working for the public interest, they are working for themselves. And that is why I want to look at the amount we spend on disciplinary things. Because some of them we have been taking us on, but we have actually thrown them out there. We hope to get the results where we've got more professional people who want to serve the public, who understand that what we are using is public money, and that's what we have. I'm going to ask Tara to just indicate in that area on the specific cases that we've dealt with in this regard.
Thanks, Chair. In terms of the investigation that we conducted within the corporate real estate business, one was to look at the revenue leakages, and the second one, the conduct of the project managers that are managing our CAPEX programs, and as well as the collection of rentals. And Deloitte was the company that was doing the investigation. We have the report, we've acted on the report. In some of the cases where the issues of internal controls, where there were lack of internal controls following those policies, etc., etc. So some of the staff members with the minor things they were given final written warning letters. We have five cases with the CMA at the moment dealing with the suspension of those staff members who were found guilty in terms of both on the procurement side and then and also on the revenue leakage. Another thing that I would like to mention as well, we had a lot of resignations during the process of the investigation, where people could pick up that they are being identified as the culprits of not following proper processes, etc. And then we started seeing a lot of project managers resigning. I think now what we need to do is to take it to the next step and try and recover those monies from those staff members, even if they have left the organization. So this is where we are, and actions have been taken. And another thing that I would like to mention is that the team within the CRES environment has changed. We have a new CEO, we have a new CFO, and the executives within the real estate management side, as well as on the project side.
No, Chair, thank you for that. I was going to ask about recovery. And are there any criminal charges against anybody? Because there could be criminal intent here. And then what I'd like to know, Chair, is can you quantify the alleged misappropriation? Do you have a figure for us? And then I heard very carefully. My right ear is not very good. My left ear is better. But one of the reasons for this was lack of internal controls. You've just been talking about how good it is, how much money has been spent on internal controls. But one of the reasons is lack of internal controls. So it just emphasizes the point that the Auditor General is correct in identifying lack of internal controls as a point. But I'm glad that they're also working towards it. You've got to beef up your internal controls to pick up these issues. So I don't know if you have a figure that you can give us now, and whether these reports have been given to the Portfolio Committee or to the Executive Authority. I wouldn't have asked if they had it, but whether these reports are made public or sent back to the respective committees, because it would be good if that happens.
Of course, I do say that the Audit Committee says it is very happy with the internal control.
Okay.
Pity the chairperson is not here, but you see, Comrade Deputy Minister, we read the report of the Audit Committee as thoroughly as the report of the Auditor General, and in most cases they're not, except I think it was the Audit Committee of Transport. Was it, Comrade Ross? And that was the only report we felt it was not cut and paste. It was thorough, it was detailed, it was very useful in terms of holding management account. So I'm just raising this element around internal control and what we have here. But you can respond to that question around quantification. Are these reports available? Are they with Portfolio Committee? Are they with Executive Authorities?
The report are available. I think they were also given to the AG when they started the audit. So they're not, they are available, but I'm not so sure in terms of whether they were sent to National Treasury or not. But in terms of during the audit, we provided the reports to the AG, the Deloitte report covering the revenue leakage, as well as the on the project side, they were made available.
Yeah, just want to emphasize, of course, we can't quantify particularly on the revenue. It can indicate, it can be an indicative figure that the DLF, for example, would look at. I think that we said that if you look at our product class business, it has got the potential to operate, to actually exceed 600 million rands when it was at about 400 million rands. Now, whether each and every revenue we're not getting is due to what are fraudulent activities, I think something else. So I just want also to say that we look at all material hands on the adequacy and effectiveness of the internal controls. And I think that it's something that we take seriously, and that is why one of the major areas of weakness that we found was that when you look at, for example, on CAPEX spending, both on the property side, as well as some of the issues that I think Honorable Chilane raised earlier on, where there's a lot of activity, people do try to take advantage of that. And I think it relates to the very point you've made. Is the quality of management effective? And do you have the tools, management tools, to be able to pick up? But I can assure the committee that most of the things we're actually discussing were even picked up by management. And for example, if you look at the security issues, we find that there was a fraudulent issue, and we dealt with, when the public protector dealt with those issues, we dealt with indicated the steps that we have. I think the weakness that I think we should learn from this committee is the fact that just some of those financial misconduct, indeed in terms of the KFMA, needs to be reported, and that in some instances we need to pursue criminal cases. Now, on the investigation on fuel, for example, that that's a matter that is currently with the Hawks, we did present it there, and I think that is one of the matters that they've been dealing with. We have also had a special investigation focusing meeting with the police in respect of people who are dealing cables. And we find that in some cases, not external people. It's actually a syndicate colluding with our people, and I think that some of those were actually arrested, including people from our own security department, as it were. So, I think that we are dealing with the challenges.
Okay. Yes, Chair, I'm just moving towards conclusion. I just trust that all checks and balances are put in place with this 51 billion rand tender that is being considered. We don't want that tender to come here before SOBA when we question whether it was transparent, etc., etc. So let's just hope that that's on track. There is this last investigation where there were allegations made by the National Transport Movement Union, of tender irregularities and mismanagement, and I know this is something before the public protector. I'd just like to know from side of PRASA, what was their full cooperation, and what can you say about this investigation? What have you been informed about this investigation?
So perhaps I should start, and the chairman would summarize it. We have fully cooperated in the Office of the Auditor General. We provided details. Public protector, my apologies, public protector. That's how I love the AGA chair. we've worked very, very well. Of course, there were issues. We could think that they impact on a number of legal issues there. But I can assure the committee that as we stand right now, we have presented each and every document, and I think the Auditor General has gone to the public protector has gone out in public to confirm that they've received all the documents, they're analyzing them, and we're hoping that they will bring that to the project as quickly as possible. I've been very clear in our responses. I think that we've even exceeded in the number of things that were required, and we're confident that we all the allegations that we made were not correct.
Okay, no, that's fine. But just in that regard, I did write to the Office of the Public Protector and received the response yesterday to say the investigation was delayed by capacity constraints. There were further delays on the part of PRASA in terms of cooperating with the investigation. There were further delays on the part of PRASA in cooperating with the investigation. However, progress has since been made. The provisional report is being written and quality assured, and they are not able to say with certainty when the report will be issued at this stage, but they will advise us. So I just thought this is places on record as well, the official response from the public protector. Okay.
So I think we have
No. I think I don't think that should be a point of further engagement. I'm not sure what it would mean. You've submitted documentation, he's confirming that they have got the documentation, they're working on a report. So
for me, I would imagine that let's leave it at that. You know, I'm telling you, I don't think there's anything we need to talk to. The allegations that have been made, they have been investigated. We'll get a report. I think that's the best we can do today, here, now.
I can confirm that I've been to the public prosecutor's office myself, presenting the head of the criminal OMB affair. We gave our full support to the public prosecutor.
Okay. That's fine. Sim? You're done. Alright, Dr. Rabi?
Can I mention? When I went through the report of draft on page 87, I think it is, it's regarding the notes, Chairman, I think it's item number, it's on page 87, sir, it's on expenditure and operating expenditure, I think it's note 25. Just this last one, the other expenditure in 2013 was 152,783. And 2012, Chairman, is 65,787. So I'd just like to more than double that. Is it possible that I can have clarity on that? What is the other expenditure entail? And why was there such an escalation in the amount of other expenditure? I'd like to hear that. Thank you, Chairman.
Okay.
Yeah, Chair, obviously, I think we didn't anticipate the question as it has come. But obviously we've got a list of what is the makeup of that particular.
All right, you'll send it to us.
We can provide.
All right. Oh, that's fine. Yeah. But still on that note 25, CEO, you see, that phone item says internal audit, and you say this was for investigation. Where are the fees for your consult internal auditors?
The audit fee, Chair, that we talk about, external audit, is what we pay the auditor general.
That one is clear.
That is clear. That is number one. The second item would involve basically the cost that we carry, even with what is called the cost of in the company.
As
that
well
we
as the investigation.
But Chair, the investigation, it recalls that when we appoint them, when we have management intervention in the middle of the financial year for an investigation, that they will bill separately because it will not have been part
but
of
But I'm saying that you say it is part of that 60 million. Right. But then I see somewhere down the line you have professional fees of 256 million.
Okay, I think that is how we denote them in the report because these are basically, when we work with Transnet, there are people working in the signal room in helping us to move the train. They are charged to us under professional fees. And that's the bulk of that amount, which is
amongst others. It's not only them. Is it only the Transnet people here?
It would be about maybe I'll say 85%, but I will provide the breakdown of that. But
all
the
right. That's fine. We have the breakdown. No problem. I also see your legal fees from 26 million to 33.6. Is this a CMA cases or court cases? What involved by and large?
It is both, Chair. The primary thing we got, you recall that the CCMA will be one major area, but the primary driver in our own space has been the insurance claims. These insurance claims have got to court when you have accidents. You find that usually we talk to someone putting a claim, but where they are dispute, for example, on what they should get, and that will, for example, go to court. And so that is one major area of legal activity. And recently, say, over the past year, we've had one major case related to our advertising space, which have been in the High Court. And I think it involves quite a number of companies that have taken trust to court. So that's a detail.
Can we go to page 91, contingent liabilities. Such a long list. And when you put that together, it amounts to 593 billion. Can we? Can we get some additional information on this?
Indicia will provide the details. The most important thing is that we've, I think from an accounting point of view, there's a potential liability we've provided for it. I think that is, that part is a responsible thing to do.
Yeah, correct. I agree with you. What we'd want is further details in terms of, on this one, this is what happened, this is how it happened, this is where we are. This issue. Is there any one of these issues that, so none of these issues that I hear have been resolved? Just switch your mic on.
But for the record, Chester, sorry about that. Some of these are in court or in arbitration as we speak.
All right.
But we will provide all the details.
All the details.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we'll then engage on them once we have the details. Because I'm looking at the interest from Transnet. I mean, 187 million, which I'm sure if these liabilities were out of the way, you know, the shortfall we spoke about in the budget could have actually been covered. 150 something million. Some of these amounts, because I'm sure liabilities will always be part of the operation, and it's good if provision has been made for them, so that, you know, we don't. I want to check with the chairperson of the board. I'm looking at the Prasa and its subsidiaries, Interside Auto Parks, the rest of them. And I see that the CEO is the chairperson of two of them. How did you come to that arrangement? And help us to understand how it happens that the group CEO chairs two of your entities, or is the chairperson of the board of two of your entities, of the subsidiaries.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's a functional item of trying to follow your organization. It became very clear at some page when we went to do the board of our subsidiaries. There's a lot of disconnect between what we're doing and what the other boards will do. When they are even arriving at different decisions, we have to spend a lot of time trying to reconcile what decisions have been taken at board. And because it's something that I'm saying, the right hand of not knowing what the left hand of doing. We also, for example, talk about some of the issues which are arising for them from subsidiaries. The people have to be disciplined and so on, and it has make sure that people have taken some form of advantage of the brand, which they have, for instance, the brand of strategy that the bigger support was taking. So I don't think it's a time to bring back to the board, the fact that it was well at this stage of our group. So what I said, we already found that it was in 2009, that for us to try and put the systems and recognize the systems and so on, it was very important that we could see all the children those bonds. I think that's the first thing we can do that informed this decision. And Chair, I could also have to say that even in some companies, it's not something which is uncommon. It does happen when you could see all children the part of Africa to try and align what we are trying to do with the group and what is happening at the subsidiary level. Well, it's a piece of system, but I think that's not a friendly decision, so thank you.
Right. Well, you say this is not a permanent arrangement. So, are there time frames? Because if the thing is not permanent, then it must have time frame. Otherwise, it will become a permanent temporary arrangement. You see.
Take it for within the same issue that you raised before, within that any time frame. said on an ongoing basis, we look at whether we are now achieving our overall objective that has made us get into this arrangement.
My advice would be that whatever you do as a temporary measure, let's have time frame. Because that assists us to work toward the goal. If there's no time frame, and it's open ended, it can be problematic. So you also don't want to place the group CEO in a very difficult situation where whilst managing everything, he's also micromanaging two entities over and above. I think from governance point of view, it's something I'm still battling to reconcile myself to, and would urge that it be looked. I'm sure in the board of the of PAFA, there are enough of you who could, because my sense is that if you have the board of Interfide, which does not link with the proper group board, that's probably where you start to have parallelism. And having the CEO was to try and close that gap so that when he's sitting at Interfide, he knows what's happening at proper level, and information can go up and down. I think the principle is correct. How we apply it might be something we may need to interrogate and say how do we manage that. Right. And I think Comrade Deputy Minister, I'm just remembering that it's something raised with the Minister of Public Enterprises when we're dealing with SAA, because the reports that come to Parliament are for the group, not the subsidiary. So, if we say there's a loss, we're not able to, or if there's a profit, we're not able to disaggregate and say, this subsidiary and this one are contributing positively. This one is the one that is, you know, a negative contributor to the overall picture. So it's fine with the overall picture, but would also want to have a sense of what these subsidiaries are contributing to the overall. So would also want to make the observation and the request that it might be correct that when we have the annual report of PRASA as a group, we also have the financials of the subsidiaries. So we can be able to look at the contribution of each of the subsidiaries to the total group performance. I think that would assist us. Because right now we have no sense of what AutoPack is contributing, what Interfide is contributing. We have the global picture. But it would assist us to go into the into the deeper detail. If there's no other question, I'll give the chair of the portfolio committee. She has been patiently sitting. If there are issues, comrade, that you may want to raise, I'll give you the opportunity to.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I think that we are satisfied with the engagement that has taken place in COPA and PRASA. When we look at the performance of PRASA from the perspective of transport, we see a value at, because we reflect on the nature of railway transportation that was inherited, and the when was PRASA established, and what has PRASA managed to do in terms of transport services in South Africa. And we see an entity that has added value. Hence, we are even pushing for the adoption of the railway transportation as a backbone of transport in South Africa. We are also mindful of the fact that Plaza is also on a stage of development. Plaza has not reached the majority stage as an entity. It is on a stage of development. And we are happy that issues that we point out to them, they respond to them positively. Particularly on the issues of rebuilding the manufacturing industry in South Africa to produce components that are used to build locomotives as well as the infrastructure. They have also been very positive in implementing the 55% local, 55 local, and 35 foreign in the procurement system. And we think that this is one entity that we can all learn from in terms of thinking out of the box, as well as transforming the entire transportation. Because if we say railway transportation is the bone of the country, it means that the lead part that they are playing would assist other transport modes. Having said that, we are concerned by the fact that they were given an unfunded mandate to actually inherit Shosholozane, which is the most needed transport if we were to reduce the fatal accidents on the roads, particularly on the transportation of migrant workers who are currently using mainly the taxi industry type of transport. And we think that there is a need for looking at the mandate which Shosholoza made, which we want to retain, which must come with the adequate funding so that we are then able to provide that service, perhaps able to provide that service without squeezing from the budget that is not meant for Shosholoza, for Shosholoza Mail. And also in terms of the board, we are happy that PRASA has always, all the time, when appearing before the Portfolio Committee on Transport, it's not only the CEO that would come, but the chairperson would also come. And we see that as a respect to Parliament by the entity and a good working relationship between the board and the officials that are working in Transfer. The last thing is that of all challenges that are identified, we've never had any resistance from the side of Transfer as well as Department of Transport to actually respond positive and correct whatever we have identified, and we are happy with that. We thank the department, particularly the acting DG, because there is congruence in terms of planning. What is planned by the department is common to what is being planned by TRASA. We don't find a situation where TRASA then would be saying something that is different from what the department is planning. And we are very happy also that it has never had a qualified report and the findings that have been identified, I think that they are able to respond to and have intervention. And we are very much with their progress that they are making.
All right. Thanks, Comit. Mr. DG, I was looking for the DG whilst we're seated here. Okay. Yes, maybe if I give the Deputy Minister.
Yeah, thanks, sir. Chef, before the, the Deputy Minister comes in. There's a couple of things I want to mention. Thanks to the Honourable Justice. And I think from our side, in context, we really and indeed are satisfied with the performance. But of course, we must understand that in the context of wanting to, within the constrained environment that the chairperson indicated, we'd want to push the envelope to say, Prasa, please achieve more. But secondly, I think, there's the fear then, as you see from the department side, Prasa is committed to cleaning up the environment. We have committed ourselves in the department and should see the improvements in our annual bond and how we've moved in the direction that both the control committee, including SOP, have forced us to move, and we are indeed moving in that direction. I think it's going to reflect in our entities, and that's how, therefore, on our side, we want to provide that leadership to say, let's do that. But I think one of the things, and it's based on the initial discussion, I think one of the things, I had invited AG in our ex-co on Monday. Unfortunately, our agenda was too long. I never got to talk to him. But we agreed on a number of things. But key to it, and it's an issue that really is at the heart of how we need to measure and approach the audit going forward, so that we do not have this back and forth. One of the things, and we raised in my first audit sitting at 18 DG, we've got to contextualize the environment within which all of us are operating. Particularly if you're a network industry, including that you don't have operation link. And the nature of how your process becomes critically important. So I think those are some of the things that going forward, and then I think we'll begin to flesh out. Because your infrastructure entities and your infrastructure departments, which are key in advancing and delivering on government's mandate, we do not want to audit to undermine the grounds that have been made. And I don't think it's the nature of, I don't think that's the spirit, but it tends to come in the, and we've seen in the debate, and it tends to come there. But I think they're great to meet and discuss. I think it becomes important that we lay the debate. And I think I made a commitment to the AG personnel to run in the team that. I think it's something that we will work on, and I think it's something that we need to improve on. Of course, all of us are out to make sure that what gets reflected is true reflection of the business, so that then we can take the necessary responsibility as managers and as management to make sure that whatever comes out is seen in the light that it is. Thanks.
Comment to the minister.
No, thank you. Maybe on the issue related to the unfunded mandate, which is related to the social mail, I must say that indeed it's our concern, and we have indeed been engaging Treasury with regard to that, hence the shifting of 650 million rand from the capital budget of Plaza to fund that unfunded mandate. Going forward, after this 650, there's still no clear funding with regards to that. But we know for a fact as the department that we need this service and we will continue to engage Treasury. There are many other issues, just either than the funding itself on issues of access that need our discussion together with the Department of Public Enterprises, as Sylvan of course said. The very issue that good as it is, but it needs a lot of improvement in terms of speed, in terms of quality of service that it is providing. That also talk to funding, because you'll only do that if you have got funds, but also, of course, if you agree with the DPE, probably to get priority when it comes to using the infrastructure that is owned by DPE, that is the rail lines themselves. We welcome the engagement. And we are thankful to SCOPA for asking the questions. They can only sharpen our own management and dealing with issues. And we take that with a warm heart and we think we're going to use that information and the questions that you've asked. I also want to mention the fact that there are quite a number of issues that we are expected to respond to, where we are expected to provide more information and probably some clarity, for instance, on the issue of targets, whether it's 35 or it's whatever number, or and so on. I don't know whether the chairperson will still insist that we come back next week, because we're thinking that we could actually provide a written response on some of these issues, and then of course maybe the chairperson will decide on whether we're coming back next week. We believe that as the executive we need to meet with the Auditor General if possible, in fact it should be possible, and of course PRASA, so that we can iron out some of these differences so that we come to one conclusion and we're able to respond to SCOPA having had such a meeting. Chairperson, I just want to mention the fact that indeed it is true that PRASA is only 4 years old and it inherited a very fragmented passenger railway services. It is also very true that by 1986, the former government was spending, before to 1986, was spending something like a billion rands. But by 1988, it was spending only 699 million rands on these services. And therefore, PRASA took over a service that was actually on the verge of collapsing. That was fragmented, and it had to deal with that. And 2% the turnaround strategy that was developed under the leadership of Group CEO and of course approved by the board under the leadership of the chairperson Buthelezi has really turned around the passenger railway services in South Africa for a bit. I think today SCOPA has its mandate to focus on those shortcomings that are reflected on the report. But we can actually go to Johannesburg and come back relating to SCOPA, the achievements that have actually taken place, that are tangible, that can actually be touched. The very fact that they've handled a massive combat and up to today, we think that that was done in the most professional and ethical manner that has not been seen and that we can only appreciate. The fact that just last week or 2 weeks ago, the president opened the bridge city in the history in South Africa, that you're going to have a railway line underground, and of course the complex. It's something that is only happening now within a period of 4 years. So the point I'm trying to make is that we believe that this is one entity, and for it to come before SCOPA, I think it should be welcomed. It should be taken positively to say this gives us an opportunity to strengthen and to sharpen our way of doing things because we're such an important entity. So, Chairperson, I just want to mention the very fact that just over the past few years, PRASA took more than 3,000 coaches through the accelerated rolling stock refurbishment program, and it spent almost 10 billion rand to refurbish and upgrade trains. 10 billion rand. And so far, we've not had problems about that. And if they continue to have that, they're actually managing huge projects and they aren't complaining. Even those that took them to court, they withdraw the case because they realized that they didn't have any case because they've done it so well. So we really want to appreciate the engagement as the executive and to thank SCOPA for asking the questions. We were actually noting them down and we will be interested to get the report. Definitely we'll get it so that we can actually look at ourselves and then say what are the areas that we need to strengthen and the balls that we need to score tighter so that we continue to perform. As far as the executive is concerned, we really appreciate, I think, what PRASA has achieved within a very short space of time under very difficult conditions. It has not been easy. And the road is still very long. There's still a lot that needs to be done. But then today we speak of a possibility of, if not even a possibility, it's a resolution that we want to have a company in South Africa that is actually building trains is an achievement. It can only be an achievement for South Africa. And therefore, the list is endless. I just wanted to make those comments. And thank you very much for the manner in which you ran this meeting. And thank you for the contributions and the questions that came from SCOPA. We prepared thoroughly for meetings such as this. Because they don't do it. But thank you very much. Thank you very, very much.
Well, no, thank you, comrades. I'm I'm sure you sometimes remember your previous life sitting here as a committee chair yourself. Bob Tillis, what you think? No, want to thank you and your colleagues for the engagement that we've had. I want to assure the Deputy Minister and yourself that the extent of our engagement does not reflect a blind side of the good things that you have done and the good work that you have done. And we're very clear that we're calling you here with an unqualified audit. unlike some of your sister entities who come here with disclaimers and all that kind of stuff, and where you find sometimes there's no synergy within the leadership sitting here. So we appreciate that, but we want you to be the best of the best. So we'll keep on pushing you, stretching you to move towards perfection. We must not be satisfied. I think that is what dialectics teaches us, to continue forward movement, qualitative improvement. So we want to continue to push. So Muta, I'm yelling for lesunga sala. So far, we're not gone. Yeah, I'm not saying just look as we are perfect. So Kodabo Praza, they're a shining example. You can do it if Praza can do it. You know, so we can start talking about the positive, and so we're quite cognizant of that, and the fact that 4 or 5 years in terms of organizational development is quite a short period of time, but want things done the right way, especially if we're providing a public service from which the fiscus has to sustain us. We have to be extra careful with every cent that we have. DG, I very much like your approach of engaging with auditors. I think if there's one legacy that Nombembe is leaving us, is one of closer engagement between the audited departments and his office, so that you don't meet during all the time and it's a clash, but able throughout there to engage, understand, and have a sense of how things are done. But it must be clear that from our side, engagement and debates about how things will be done is not endless. The auditor general is there to inform you how things are done. So whatever room is there to engage is to assist you to understand the process and to clarify, not to debate whether or not, and we have rarely allowed a dispute that would seek to impinge on the integrity of that office. But I ever felt that some of the issues that were raised here, it is good that we pursue them well. And to say that it is important that where these processes take place, we all need to put our strength and make sure that they happen smoothly. Because unlike a taxi, they're like the train. Once it leaves the station, even if you can come and wave your hand, it goes. So if there are time frames, let's stick to those time frames. Because information that comes thereafter, however correct, good, might not assist the process once it is passed. Now, having had the Minister of Finance very, very carefully on cost-cutting measures, I want to make the suggestion of the Deputy Minister. I would like that the department should meet with the Auditor General around point one. Is it 21? This one that we're haggling about.
Thank you.
All right, let's start with targets. That's number one. Number two, the annual financial statement. Click on page one. On two. On them. Which page is the report of the Auditor General? Huh? 41. Somebody's saying 41. All right. All right. On page 43. On page 43. Yes. 21. Are we having a dispute on 22? Huh? Yeah, I'm asking a question. Are we having a dispute on 22? No? No. Bombard? No, don't. Okay, 21. Fine. You go and engage on 21, and then I'd like to get a report on what transpired, so you don't have to come to Cape Town next week. And then, of course, the target. Let's go and number one is the target. That's your agenda. Meeting after welcome and introductions and whatnot. Number one is your target. Number two is 21. Paragraph 21. What is it? And then we'd want to get a report. I would like to get a report from both of you that either says we have resolved this or haven't. If you haven't, then I would want you to go and collect all your evidence. Then we'll come and sit down and we'll go through whatever evidence and find the point of contradiction. But also, I don't want it in the report, but I want to take note. The insinuation, if not the point that was being made by Prasa, was that they did not see the final report of the Auditor General, or they were auditing and they did not have the opportunity to review that report and then saw things as they are reported now. The Auditor General told us that she did not see the final draft, or there was no opportunity to review so as to ensure that there are no inconsistencies. I would want you to clear that between yourselves, so that we don't have this kind of thing recurring. If we do that, we will be in order. Thanks very much to everyone, National Treasury, Auditor General, Kumbete.